discussions to show goodness, honesty, understanding and wisdom in all that we undertake for the benefit of the city of Joondalup and our residents. May we respect each other's views at all times, and we ask all of this in your name. Amen. Thank you. Please be seated. I declare this meeting open at 12 midday. The first item of business is declarations of interest. I've received a number of declarations and I'll work through those now. First of all, from Councillor Daniel Kingston for item 12.9, outcomes of community consultation, environment strategy. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as Councillor Kingston is the Secretary of the Friends of Yallagonga Regional Park, which provided feedback on the plan. A declaration from Councillor Christine Hamilton-Prime for item 12.5, e-rideables rideshare service in the city of Joondalup. This is an interest that may affect impartiality as Councillor Hamilton-Prime owns an e-scooter and is an admin of the WA Scooter Enthusiasts. A declaration from Councillor Fishwick for item 12.10, corporate sponsorship application, Swimming WA Inc. Open Water Swim Series for 24-25. This is an interest that may affect impartiality as Councillor Fishwick is intending to enter the Open Water Swims. A declaration of myself for item 12.11, corporate sponsorship application with the Church of Christ Incorporated for Heathridge Carols in the Park in 2024. This is an interest that may affect impartiality as I regularly attend Whitford Church of Christ church services. A declaration from Councillor Hamilton Prime for item 12.13, sponsorship of significant events, Joondalup Festival of Motoring 2024, interest that may affect impartiality as the organiser, Justin Hunt, is known to Councillor Hamilton Prime. And I also have a financial interest from myself for item 12.20, tender for the processing of commingled recyclables service. This is a financial interest as I do some external work on matters which involve tender applicants for this item. Councillors, just looking through my list here, are there any other declarations of interest? If not, you'll see on the agenda next item is, I do have another one from Councillor Philip Vinciullo. It's for item 13.15. This is an interest that may affect impartiality as Councillor Vinciullo is the president of the Joondalup Symphony Orchestra. Any other declarations, councillors? If not, you'll see on your agenda at number 4, deputations. That item is dealt with at the briefing session, which was held on the 13th of August. Next item is public question time. There's a set of procedures which relates to public question time, and I request that you follow my direction at all times. You'll have an opportunity to ask 2 questions. Your question should be directed to myself and asked in a polite and respectful manner. Please state your name and address for the public record before asking your question. As is our practice, I maintain a register of names of people who might wish to ask questions, and I'll call forward first Ms. Mary O'Byrne.
Mary O'Byrne, 123 Glencore Loop, Kinross. Good afternoon, councillors. Both of my questions reference Mindarie Regional Council and Catalina Regional Council. What conflict of interest resolution skills training is given to elected members who are appointed as delegates to either the Mindarie Regional Council landfill or the Catalina Regional Council, which deals with land sales? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Byrne. As is required now, all elected members, so all councillors, are required to undertake a full training program, whether they are newly elected or have been elected for any period of time. My understanding is all elected members around this table have completed that program, and that includes conflict of interest training. Do you have a second question?
Thank you. For both regional councils, the City of Joondalup and Wanneroo have between them 4 voting rights. The City of Stirling has 4 voting rights. The others, Vincent, Perth, Vic Park, Cambridge, have 1 vote each. Since the problems from the TAPE are well known, that they're the pong is pretty hard for the local communities here in Wanneroo and Kinross, but they could be addressed. The problems could be addressed. Is there a coalition of member councils preventing expensive remedial operations being undertaken by the works at Mindari to benefit local communities? Thank you.
No, thank you, Ms. O'Byrne.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I call forward Mr. Vito Tukule.
Hello, Mr. Mayor, and I hope you're having a good day today. And I'd like to ask you, what are you and the other councillors doing to make school a more safe and inclusive environment?
Thank you, Mr. Tukule. I will hand over to who wants to take that question. Director Lee, thank you.
Thank you through you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for the question. The city provides support to schools, so fundamentally schools would be a state government responsibility for our public schools and then individual schools themselves for our private schools. However, through our youth development team, we do engage regularly with schools and provide them support and programming to keep to make students aware of how they can keep themselves safe and also how they can develop themselves as well. And today's youth forum is an example of where we engage with schools and bring them in and provide them some support and opportunities for growth.
Yeah. Thank you, Councillor. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Tukule. Ms. I think Sophia Rasso. And again, for students, only need to say your name and we can see which school you're with, so no need to state address, as Mr. Tukule did not, and thank you for that. Appreciate it.
My name is Sophia Rasau, and I was wondering what the council has done to act on climate change and how schools can help take initiative.
Thank you very much. Ms. Macario.
Thank you, and through you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for your question. The city has a really long history of dealing with climate change. We have a number of plans in place. We currently have our draft climate change plan out for consultation. I would really encourage students to put in feedback on our draft. We would love to know your feedback and have your input into developing the final that comes to council for endorsement. But we do have a number of initiatives that we do throughout the year with the community and for schools to be involved as well around renewable energy in the community, teaching people how to reduce energy in their homes. For our own buildings, we have renewable energy. We do a number of projects that are looking at having less carbon footprint. A main project that we're working on at the moment is our tree planting program. So we have a significant program to plant trees to reduce the urban heat island effect. But I would encourage you to have a look at the draft plan that's out for consultation at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I do have another name here on the register, but my apologies, I can't. Is there any other questions? I'll just give students a chance first. Students, I've got two other questions. If any of you do want to, this is your opportunity. I'll call forward first Mr. Sidiris, I think. Thank you, Ms. Pizzi. Councillor Pizzi.
Hi, Mitch Sedaris, Page Drive, Mullaloo. First question relates to the project that's the car parking upgrades being done at Mullaloo. When do you think that project timeline might be completed in order to allow us to put together a public community engagement program dealing with WA beach cleanup?
Mr. Hamley?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I don't have that updated information on me at the present time, Mr. Sidiris, but I will get that through to you.
Thank you. Take that on notice, Mr. Sidiris. Do you have a second question?
Yep, sure. Let me just try and... I have to swap glasses. Sure. I understand that there's been a number of changes to threatened ecological communities, and the question relates to that. And has the city or is the city undertaking a new survey of the coastal reserve to ensure that there are no capital works programs that will be impacted by that new TEC development?
Thank you, Mr. Sidiris. The city is aware of new TECs and where they impact on the coastal foreshore and is taking that into account in its future planning. Thank you.
Sorry, but that changes. They're not.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sidiris. So who was that student who raised their hand? Please come forward, state your name and address for the record. And I saw you. I'll come to you next. Thank you.
Hello. I'm Grace from Dulwich. Does the council have a direction of view for a city that the school can hand out to the students?
So, Director Lee?
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for the question. As I mentioned before, the city does engage very regularly with our local schools to provide support and programming. One of the things that we find really successful beyond the youth forum from today is our youth truck. We find that a really useful tool that we like to take to schools themselves, but also to our local parks and our skate parks. It's an opportunity for youth to engage with our youth services staff, have open conversations, and provide, and it gives our teams the opportunity to provide some guidance and support to students as to where they might find additional services or additional support as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Student in the front row, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Miss Sienna Ford from Duncraig. I was just wondering, what systems are you working on to help to make the process of acclaiming DA approval for newly building families and easier and faster? And how efficient is that to help students getting into the catchment for like high schools, my sister, as an example?
Great question. Thank you. Director Lee, it's your afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you, and thank you for the question. So there's a range of things that we do as a local government to try and make the planning process and building process easier for our community, and also the state government has a very full agenda of planning reform, which one of the pillars is to make planning more simple, more efficient and more transparent. Some of the things that we do within the city is we receive applications of all sorts. So they might be very small applications, like someone wanting to build a front fence or a patio, or it could be a very complex application where a hospital wants to build a new mental health facility. We don't put them all in the same bundle. We find the simple applications and we take them to the side, and we basically call them our fast-track applications. And so we try and prioritise those so people can get on with making additions to their house, if it is a patio, if it's a new bedroom, so they can get on with building that and they're not necessarily held up by the big complicated ones. Another thing that we do at a more strategic level, and it's led by the state government, is as each council is required to identify how they will support population growth. Each individual council has a target they're asked to achieve, or at least facilitate, by the year around 2050. And what we've done there is we've identified certain areas throughout the local government area that are considered to be suitable for higher density or redevelopment. And what that allows someone in those areas to do is to perhaps replace an existing house with two or three, and so that provides the opportunity for more people to live in the city of Joondalup. It also provides an opportunity for different housing types in the city of Joondalup as well. We obviously have a very diverse community, and some people want to live in big family homes, and some people prefer to live in smaller homes as well. And we look to locate those in I guess, strategic locations where people can access services and amenities, so if it's close to a train station or close to a shopping centre.
Thank you. If possible, I'd like to invite my peer up, Mia Chapman, to ask my second question.
I will give Mia a call. What I'm going to do is I've got Ms. Kwok, and then I'll go to Ms. Chapman. We'll get a chance to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Director, and thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Kwok.
Michelle Kwok, 15 Crowbobo Ocean Reef. Good afternoon, Mayor, councillors. The question is on smart parking meters. What proportion of these end up being having cash options?
Director Humphrey, or Lee, sorry, it's shifted. Director Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you. Thank you for the question. I don't have the specific numbers in front of me, Ms. Kwok, but I'm happy to take the question on notice and provide that to you. I do recall, though, when Council considered the tender earlier this year, there was a request that we do include a proportion of cash-enabled machines. From the top of my head, it turns out to be about 25%. But as I said, happy to take that question on notice to provide you the percentage, but as well as the actual number itself.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Young lady from Duncraig, please.
Hi, I'm Mia Chapman, Mr. Governor from Duncraig. How much is the government tackling action to fight climate change in global warming and deforestation, as well as how the paper copies that are like 60 pages long, why do we need the massive amount of paper being used?
Thank you. I'll go to Ms. Macario first, and then I'll add a couple of comments afterwards. Ms. Macario.
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. Thank you for your question. As I previously mentioned, we do have a climate change strategy in place at the moment, and we've got a new one that's out for public comment. So I would encourage you and your school to provide us with your feedback. But we are aligning our emissions reduction targets with the state government's targets, so we're having alignment there in our approach. In regard to paper, that is definitely a focus for us organisationally. We have a number of projects that we're working on to have more digital formats. We've actually transitioned many of our processes over to having a digital format. The agendas and papers is one of the things that we are still working on to try to reduce the impact of printing paper. Thank you.
I'll make a couple of comments, but councillors, I just see we're running out of time, so I'm proposing to extend public question time for 10 minutes, seconded to Councillor Hamilton Prime. By show of hands, those in favour, carried unanimously, thank you. Otherwise, the clock would have run out on my comments. Just in terms of the points that you raised in your question, chance for me, first of all, to comment about the emission reduction targets that the state has set and where we sit as a council. Our single largest point of emissions is the power for the streetlights in and around the city. In fact, it's such a quantum of our emissions that unless we can convert them all to LED, we simply cannot meet our targets, even if everything else was zero. So the City of Joondalup has, for those streetlights which it owns, which are part of Hillary's, all of Iluka and most of the Joondalup CBD, we've already converted all of them to LEDs, and we are engaging with the state government to seek to take over street lighting in areas such as Duncraig, which is one of the older areas of the city, and if we can take over the street lighting and convert it like we have up here in the Joondalup CBD and other suburbs, A, you'll get modern lighting, but also B, that is the one thing that will get us on our way to our emission reduction target, and without it, we simply can't meet it. That's how much of our emissions it is. In terms of forestation, we are built out as a city in terms of we don't have a lot of greenfields growth, a little bit in Burns Beach, but that's already been cleared. We are trying to reforest our city. I think we are the only council still who mandates street trees for about a dozen or so streets every 2 years. So sometimes a difficult policy and was introduced some years ago. The Joondalup Council has consistently held the line on what we call our Leafy City program. Lilburn Drive, I think, has been a beneficiary of it. Also, in fact, the street running, is it Reedshaw, running alongside? I think we planted out recently as well. So we pick major streets in the city, noting that we're 50 years old and we still don't have tree-lined avenues.
And for those houses on that street, they get a tree whether they want one or not. And the only way you end up with leafy suburbs like you have in the inner city areas is because a generation or two ago, a council did exactly the same thing, and Joondalup is progressively rolling that out. And in terms of being paperless, many elected members are paperless now. I am as well. We print far less agendas than we used to, but also in terms of trying to be inclusive, even for people in our community who can't, we do still print a small number. But wherever possible, elected members are encouraged to go paperless. I did that several years ago and actually find it much more efficient. So thank you for your question.
Thank you.
Any further? Yes, from St. Mark's, I think. Yes.
Good afternoon to all the members of the council. We appreciate the answers you have given to our written questions. However, in regards to question two, what is being done to reduce the spread of dieback disease, we have a follow-up question.
We understand the measures put in place to reduce the initial spread of dieback through the park. However, we still have concerns in regard to the risk of future spread due to the high traffic of the area caused by the track.
Also, I'd like to mention this is in regards to the bike trail being built in the Gonga National Park. And we ask if it is being considered to put in any cleaning stations at the beginning and end of the track to wash tyres and shoes, as this has proven to be a successful solution across Australia's national parks in reducing the spread of dieback.
Thank you. I'll go to Mr. Hamling first, and I've got a few comments to make beyond that. Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Quite a few of our natural areas do have the boot wash down stations and so forth. We do manage through our friends groups and through our natural areas teams traffic moving in and out of different areas, and through the acting director we do have the policies in place as far as management plans and that, which also helped to reduce dieback. This is an education program which is spread throughout all our teams, so when we're working within the parks and also with our friends groups, to be aware of pathogens and how we actually control them. Plus, our natural areas team do have a program to actually progressively go through and treat any affected trees to try and control the spread.
In terms of the trail specifically as well, they were redesigned specifically around dieback considerations, so dieback-free areas, I think, from memory, have been excluded. But while the city's been very supportive of that program, that's being rolled out by the Department of Biodiversity Conservation and Attractions, who have internally, they're the state experts on dieback management. So I know from what I've seen from them, it's been a key factor in their planning.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Further questions? Getting a few now. I'll go, gentlemen, right up the back. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and fellow councillors. My question is, what steps are being taken by the council to provide adequate information about bushfire response plans within our local community?
Ms. McCurry.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, great question. The city does have a bushfire risk management plan in place. We're currently in the process of reviewing that, and as part of that plan, we are developing a bushfire education program to roll out to the community, where we're very aware that that is something that we can be addressing with our community, particularly given the recent fires that we've had in the region. So as part of that new plan, we'll be rolling out a education program which will include how community members and residents can respond and be prepared in case of a fire emergency. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further question? I saw two other hands. This hand here, yes, yourself. And then there was one other person I caught over here. Yes, I'll come to you next. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, and good afternoon, council members. How is the council helping youth explore career opportunities?
Director Lee, and then I'll give the CEO an opportunity as well.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for the question. So there are quite a number of things that council and the city is doing to help youth explore career opportunities. So today, our youth forum is one way of helping our youth develop and grow, and by extension, supporting them into a career. We do host a range of work placement opportunities for young people across a variety of cohorts, so including Year 10 high school students, young people seeking work experience to understand more about work environment and potential roles for the future, TAFE students seeking work placement or practical course experience to finalise their studies, as well as undergraduates and graduates themselves. Individual students, career advisors, parents and guardians generally approach the city to support these students with the various types of work experience or placement requirements. And so just to give you a couple of examples, and then I'll pass over to the CEO. So over the last couple of years, for high school and college work placements, we've hosted students in our libraries, in our community safety team, and so they look after our animal management and parking and general field officers duties, in our parks and natural areas, in our administration building itself, at our Craigie Leisure Centre, in our marketing team, as part of our civic events, and also in our regulatory services team. And so they look after things like environmental health and building compliance as well. But I'll pass over to the CEO, if I may, through you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. CEO.
Thank you for the question, and through you, presiding member. As well as providing career opportunities for young people in the city itself, a very large part of our economic development strategy for the district of Joondalup is aimed at encouraging both public and private sector investment to create employment opportunities for young people outside of the city as well as inside of the city. Our view is very much that if we can create the conditions by which people growing up and getting educated in Joondalup can choose to pursue a meaningful career in Joondalup, then that will be a mark of success.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Sir?
Sorry, this is just a question for one of my classmates who unfortunately are not here today. What steps is the Joondalup Council taking to ensure that local musical programs are accessible and inclusive for people with disabilities, including considerations for venue accessibility, sensory-free environments, and opportunities for participation?
Thank you, Dr. Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, and thank you for the question. The city's community facilities are designed and built to not only meet but to exceed the minimum standards around accessibility. They're available for local community service providers and groups to provide services to the community, including our music and cultural programs. And by way of example, the city has partnered with the Perth Symphony Orchestra to deliver the City of Joondalup Young Musician of the Year Award, which is a platform for musicians to demonstrate their skills and passion across one of five distinct instrumental categories, being brass, percussion, strings, woodwind and piano. Through the award, there's a prize pool of up to $5,000 for all young musicians to help them continue with their music journey. So that's available to any musician, and they're welcome to participate. Thank you.
Thank you, Director and Mr. Mayor, for your time.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Okay, councillors, I'm proposing to extend for a further 10 minutes, which is our last extension, seconded Deputy Mayor. By a show of hands, those in favour, those against, declare that carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, one person's hiding behind the lectern, but I can just see their hand, so I'll give you the call.
Dear Mr. Mayor and the members of the council, I am Sandy Yu from Dunkirk Senior High School, and I would like to ask if there is any action taking place to prevent accidents caused by the use of e-scooters.
I'll invite forward Mr. Wilcock. Thank you, Ms. Temple. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and through the Mayor.
The City of Joondalup has e-scooters, privately owned e-scooters already operating in the city, and the responsibility and the guidelines for the operations of those comes through the Department of Transport and has issued specific guidelines for that. The enforcement of that sits with the West Australian Police. When they're a private scooter, whether it be a scooter or a bicycle or any form of mobility, that is a mode of transport that the state government guidelines cover.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other hands, I'll just try and... yourself, the young lady in the third row.
Thank you. My name is Alira Reimers. I go to West Coast Secondary Education Support Centre. What steps is the City of Joondalup taking to make sport and recreational facilities such as HBF Arena more inclusive for students with disabilities?
Director Humphrey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Responding through you. Now, the City's not responsible for HBF Arena, so we work closely with the state government to ensure that the facility is accessible as possible. For all of our facilities, such as Craigie Leisure Centre and the various club rooms and facilities on parks and reserves, we audit them every year, and we then assign works on a priority basis to bring them up to the best possible standard we can for universal access. That's not just the ability to access the building, but also for people to be able to use the building.
Thank you, Director and Mr. Mayor, for your time.
Thank you. Had someone over this side of the room? Yes, yourself. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Crystal Hudson from Bear Ridge Secondary Support Centre. At Bear Ridge, we have a school sustainability program, and we have one of our staff taking the recycling home to in the household bins. Would the Joondalup Council consider allowing recycling bins to our schools, which would be picked up with the household bins along our streets?
I might go Mr. Pennington or Mr. Hamling, who would... Mr. Pennington.
Yeah, thank you for the question, and through you, Mr. Mayor. The recycling collections would be authorised to the Department of Education for schools. The City only provides residential collections for recycling. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sir.
Hello, Mr. Mayor and all the councillors. My name's Lucas White. I go to Secondary Education Support Centre, and I'm also coming on the WA Student Council, which is a big council that's statewide from all students from different schools are on it as well. My question is, how is the City of Joondalup collaborating with local schools to address the needs and concerns of students, especially those in special education programs?
Thank you. Director Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you, and thank you for the question. The City engaged with students during the development of our current strategic community plan, which is known as Joondalup 2032. This plan sets the strategic direction for all services and activities delivered by the City, and it provides guidance toward achieving our shared vision. Through that process, an invitation was sent to all primary schools in the City, including the education support centres. 45 students from over 20 schools attended our mayoral youth workshop, which provides a safe and inclusive forum for young people to inform the development of the new plan. In addition, and I touched on it a little bit earlier today, we do have a dedicated youth development team who work with and for young people throughout the City of Joondalup. Our team delivers a number of programs and events to provide opportunities for our young people, including the mobile youth truck, which I mentioned earlier, which provides information, advice and support to our young people in a safe environment. It's staffed by two fully qualified youth workers, and the truck has an accessible lift so young people of all abilities can access the service. I also touched on earlier, our youth development team also visits schools, including local education support centres, and with our youth truck, as well as other assets to engage in the school setting as well as out in our public reserves as well. So thank you very much for the question.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and the councillors.
Thank you. Another question was... hold on. I've already given you the call for a question. So I just need to... does anybody else wish to ask a question? Sorry, in council meetings, I can't give anybody the second call. If not, I'll declare... last chance. If not, I declare public question time closed and we proceed to public statement time. There's a set of procedures which relates to public statement time and I request that you follow my direction at all times. You're able to make a statement for up to 2 minutes. Your statement should be directed to the chair and be polite and respectful. No question or discussion will occur at the end of your statement. And again, please come forward and state your name and address for the public record, or if a student name in school is fine. As with question time, I'll start with the list that we maintain and call forward first Mrs. Linda Crawford.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Councillors, Linda Crawford, Gurun Road, Duncraig. I would like to address my continuing concerns in relation to the climate change plan, specifically the rollout of the LED lighting to the cost of $12.6 million. In answer to my previous questions, the City has confirmed that they plan to use smart meter technology similar to that used by Western Power Smart Lighting. This would be operated using a similar frequency as used by most Wi-Fi routers to connect wirelessly to the internet. This will increase our exposure to Wi-Fi and 5G, which many are concerned affect our health and environment. The Environmental Health Trust states, quote, "The unbridled energy consumption of our wireless revolution, 4G, 5G and the Internet of Things is contributing to climate change. 5G requires millions of new cellular antennas and small-celled cells, basically shorter cell towers, to be built in our neighbourhoods, directly in front of our homes. These 5G antennas are to connect with billions of new wirelessly connected smart devices, referred to as the Internet of Things. Massive increases in 5G equipment equals massive increases in energy use. According to the IEEE, 5G is an energy hog. They say, quote, that 5G could also consume up to 1,000 times as much energy. According to the Environmental Health Trust, quote, there currently are well over 500 scientific peer-reviewed papers addressing impacts of non-ionising non-thermal radiation on laboratory animals, many of the studies directly applicable to human health and safety. India dropped their RF limits by one-tenth of the ICNIRP after a 2010 government report documented the majority of research studies found adverse effects to wildlife, birds and trees. I think we need to consider whether in efforts to protect the environment we are not in fact causing more harm, and I will happily forward the research links. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mrs. Crawford. Ms. Michelle Kwok.
Michelle Kwok, 15 Crawford, Ocean Reef. Mayor, Councillors, Chair. In March this year, concerned parents tabled a petition requesting the city to consider improving road safety at Deltana Road and Spinway Street near Craigie Heights Primary School. It has been a concern for years for the residents because the road is not immediately adjacent to the primary school. It doesn't fulfill the criteria for having children's crossing. Heavy traffic volumes and speeding vehicles are hazardous to children making their way to and back from school. It's positive to learn that the city has allocated budgets for road resurfacing, installation of a minor traffic treatment, and upgrade of the pedestrian refuge to current standards in the next financial year. Since then, Main Roads WA has audited the traffic conditions along Deltana Road after monitoring this area on two occasions and determined that there are concerns with the traffic situation, they informed the school that they will raise the safety standard of the road by means of a manned children's crossing. The parents and the school are very pleased with the response. This is a great example of a good outcome by means of a petition. The residents came to council to do deputations, ask questions and make statements. They contacted their ward councillors, who have been very supportive, and council responded positively to the concern. For the benefit of our special audience today, this shows that anyone can make a difference. If no one acts because we all expect someone else to do the job, nothing will get done. Nothing will change. Best to trust and believe in yourself that you can follow your passion, be a leader, and be the change you want to see in the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kwok. Do any of our students wish to make a statement? This is your chance. I'll throw it open. Does anybody else wish to make a statement? If not, I declare public statement time closed. Next item of business is apologies and leaves of absence. I've received apologies from Councillor Jones and Councillor Hutton for this afternoon's meeting. And we also have before us a request for a leave of absence from Councillor Vinciullo. Are there any other requests for a leave of absence, councillors? If not, can I have a mover then for the motion? Before us, move Councillor Kingston, seconded Deputy Mayor. By a show of hands, those in favour? Against? Declare that carried unanimously. Thank you. Next item of business is the confirmation of minutes. Do I have a mover that the minutes of the ordinary council meeting held on the 23rd of July 2024 be confirmed as a true and correct record? Move Deputy Mayor, seconded Councillor Kingston. Is there any comment or questions on the minutes? If not, I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your vote on the screens before you. Thank you. Declare that closed and the item carried. Next is announcements by the presiding member without discussion. I'd like to take this opportunity on behalf of all of the council to officially welcome our special guests here at today's council meeting. We have with us 79 students and 12 staff members in the council chamber this afternoon, representing 11 high schools from within the city of Joondalup. Those schools are Belridge Secondary College, Belridge Secondary Education Support Centre, Duncraig Senior High School, Greenwood College, Mater Dei College, the Montessori School, Ocean Ridge Senior High School, Sacred Heart College, St Mark's Anglican Community School, West Coast Secondary Education Support Centre and Woodvale Secondary College. Elected members have agreed to hold this meeting of council during the day, annually, to give students at local schools an opportunity to see firsthand how decisions in local government are made. The first invitation for high school students to attend a council meeting was in 2006, and it's been pleasing to see growing interest from young people in local government affairs since, and also learning about issues that affect the local community. I think this year might be our best turnout in a few years as well. Students attended a youth forum organised by the city earlier today to consider issues which affect young people and discuss how to address them. I want to thank you all for your attendance and interest in the council and its business, and for your many relevant and engaging questions which were read out during public question time. I hope someday to see some of you here in the council chamber as a councillor, as mayor, or as a director of the city. Thank you also to your schools for supporting you to attend today. I'll touch briefly on e-petitions because residents can now submit e-petitions to council through a new My Joondalup portal at our website, joondalup.wa.gov.au. Once logged in, users can create an online petition, set the closing date, add their own signature and share it through channels such as social media and email. After a submission is made, the lead petitioner will receive an automated email acknowledging the city has received the online petition. The City will review the request to ensure that it conforms with the requirements of the City's Meeting Procedures Local Law and, if accepted, will open the online petition on the portal. If validated, the petition will be submitted to the Council via the usual process and the lead petitioner will receive an automated email advising the date on which Council will receive the petition. Finally, and as was addressed earlier in question time, the city has joined forces with the Perth Symphony Orchestra to give young WA musicians aged between 14 and 25 years a chance to perform on the big stage and share in a prize pool of $5,000 through the inaugural City of Joondalup Young Musician of the Year Award. Presented by PSO, this award reinforces the priority that we place on performing arts and Joondalup's growing profile as a cultural, artistic and events destination. The award will provide a platform for talented musicians from across WA to demonstrate their skills and passion across one of five distinct categories, being brass, percussion, strings, woodwind and piano. One finalist from each category will advance to a grand final where they will compete for the coveted City of Joondalup Young Musician of the Year Award and an opportunity to perform with PSO for a share of the prize pool. Entries close this Friday, the 30th of August, and the live finals will be held at Sacred Heart College in October. Please head to the Perth Symphony Orchestra website and click Get Involved for more information on this award and how to fill out the application and submit your YouTube or Dropbox link. Next item of business is identification of matters for which the meeting may be closed to the public, of which there are none. However, please Council note that we have confidential attachments for item 12.13, 12.19 or 12.20. So if anybody does wish to move that we put those behind closed, if anyone wishes to discuss the attachments, please let me know now for any of those items. If not, I will carry on. Next item of business, therefore, is petitions. We have received a petition from residents of the City of Joondalup requesting that the City consider an alternative position for the proposed pathway on the eastern side of Plumdale Way in Woodvale, included in the 24-25 Capital Works Program in relation to safety concerns. If there's no other petition, Councillor Pizzi, did you want to move a motion that we accept that and refer it to the CEO?
Yeah, and I was asking a question on it too, please.
Do you want to ask a question first? Yes.
Can I just ask, is there a reason why the western side of Plumdale Way was not used for the footpath construction originally?
Well, if it's a question about the item, are you happy to move the motion? It might be cleaner. Move it. Do I have a seconder? Seconded, Councillor Kingston. Councillor Pizzi.
Sorry, just the question is there a reason why the western side of Plumdale Way was not used for the footpath construction?
Mr. Hamling?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Mayor, we don't have that information on me at present, so I'll take that on notice. Thank you.
Councillor Pizzi? Any further questions or comments? If not, I'll put that motion then and ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. We now get to the reports section of the agenda. As is our practice, I'll work my way around the room and give councillors an opportunity to withdraw items. I'll start with yourself, Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item 12.5, the e-writable share service. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Vinciullo.
No.
Thank you, Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Two items, 12.9 and 13.1.1. Thank you.
Thank you. I will give Councillor Kingston the call on 13.1.1, just as Chair of Policy Committee, but we'll pick that up on the way through. Councillor O'Neill?
There we go. Thank you. Just 16.1. Thank you.
Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Um, 12.11, the sponsorship for the carols, and also 12.19, the tender for the Percy Dollout store youth facilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. 12.6, 12.14, 12.15 and 12.16. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'll just note that someone needs to draw out 1220 because I have a financial interest on that, so I'll just flag that that'll be withdrawn and hand over to the Deputy Mayor to chair that particular item. Deputy Mayor?
Yes, thanks. No other items to withdraw, thank you. But 1220, I'm happy to take chair on that one.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. I will withdraw 13.1.1 in preference to Councillor Chester and 13.1.5, which is the Vigilance Review. And yes, that's all.
Thank you. And Councillor Pizzi.
None for me today, thank you.
Thank you. Start therefore at item 12.5, Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move my alternate as previously circulated.
Thank you. So move. Seconded, Councillor Vinciullo. Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is a very hard and difficult decision today, and one I don't propose lightly. We are a city that prides itself on innovation, and we must be careful and give due consideration to proposed initiatives. Advancing micromobility in our city is important, but it is so much more than just providing a more sustainable and inclusive transportation option and a livable urban environment. It's also about an offset of rates opportunity that is significant that we failed to engage with our fellow local government authorities on, and the fantastic things that they have achieved and funded thanks to this opportunity to offset rates. Cost-effective infrastructure supports local business, reduces parking demand, and improved mobility and accessibility for all. However, dealing with the item before us, the administration, in my opinion, hasn't undertaken the appropriate amount of investigation in response to the previous deferral of this item and did not address sufficiently the concerns raised to give the council the confidence to proceed with the trial. I do not believe that the report addresses the genuine concerns expressed previously to allow a trial to proceed, such as strict conditions, such as, but not limited to, parking restrictions and clauses in a potential contract that would penalise any operator that didn't collect dump scooters in a minimum time frame that I had previously described needed to be considered prior to the item coming back. The administration needs to go back and engage further and investigate with the community stakeholders and other local governments and potential operators on the potential of micromobility opportunities within our city and address these risks and concerns associated. Until that has occurred, it would be premature to support a trial. With that said, I will keep this brief. I would encourage my fellow councillors to support the alternate motion to cease proceeding with a trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Vinciullo.
Thank you. My greatest concern regarding the e-scooter shared scheme trial proposal is the risk of missed opportunities. While I believe we are not collectively ready to approve a trial at this moment, it is essential that we do not shut down the possibility of revisiting this in the future. I strongly advocate for revisiting this proposal when we have a clearer and robust strategy in place. We have a unique opportunity to develop a trial and model that could be the envy of all other cities. This should be our focus. We've been fortunate to observe the experiences of cities, learning from their successes and, more importantly, their challenges. We know the core areas of concern. Let's use this knowledge to develop something better. Our core values as a city are innovative and bold, and we should embody these values in our approach to e-scooters. The e-rideable industry has already made strides it regulates on. Operators are required to provide helmets, apply speed limiters, implement geofencing, and use pedestrian detection technology. However, recent events such as Melbourne's decision to remove hire e-scooters from the CBD highlight that the long-term sustainability of e-rideables lies with the industry itself. It is clear that addressing dumping and safety messaging must become a core focus of their business model to meet local community expectations. Specifically, I'm concerned about the messaging around safety. Whilst the industry is regulated, the ability to drop, dock and lock an e-scooter, especially along our coast, must become a priority.
Eyesore dumpings are already a significant issue, and this must be addressed before we entertain a trial. Otherwise, its fate may already be determined. Over the weekend, I saw e-bikes at Joondalup Resort, equipped with proper lockable docking stations. If we can create lockable charging docking stations for e-bikes, then the e-scooter industry itself must review and improve their docking strategy as well. The benefits of e-scooters are clear, though. Reduced emissions, cost-effective transportation, job creation, reduced traffic congestion and increased accessibility, amongst many others. Implementing e-scooters in Joondalup could contribute to a vibrant, accessible and environmentally friendly urban centre. However, the critical sticking points remain dumping and safety. Past commentary on e-scooters being a menace or hackable has not helped the process and has often been driven by emotion rather than data. If we can work with the industry to develop an innovative trial scheme, we as a city can lead best practice and become a gold standard for e-scooter integration nationally and internationally. Let's be bold, let's be innovative, let's revisit this proposal with a provider who is progressive, understands community concerns, and is committed to leading better practices than what we currently see in the market. My hope is that the city continues to explore this opportunity and that, as a council, we encourage that exploration. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Venturo. Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. While I approach the introduction of e-scooter hire scheme within specified areas of the city of Joondalup with ambivalence, and while I recognise the potentials of this initiative, including enhanced mobility and environmental considerations, there are also significant concerns related to safety, public amenity and the impact on our infrastructure. I will, however, be supporting Councillor Hamilton's Prime's alternative motion, but taking cognizance of the factors I outlined, if Councillor Hamilton's Prime's motion is lost, then I believe the only way forward, a responsible way forward, is to conduct a thorough and carefully monitored 12-month trial. That trial, or the trial, would be instrumental in gathering data needed to make informed decisions about whether to proceed with the scheme on a more permanent basis. However, I strongly advocate that the council receive interim reports at 3 monthly intervals, or specifically 3, 6 and 9, throughout the trial. These interim reports would allow council to monitor progress addressing emerging issues in a timely manner and make necessary adjustments to ensure the trial's success. Should any unresolved issues arise that cannot be mitigated effectively, I believe that the council should have the option to terminate the trial early, thereby protecting the interests of our community. Consequently, I therefore foreshadow the administration's recommendation with an additional clause that requires progress reports on the 12-month trial to be submitted to council at 3, 6 and 9 month intervals, and that should any unresolved issues arise during the trial period that cannot be mitigated effectively, the council has the option to terminate the trial early. These amendments, I believe, would ensure that council remains informed and can take proactive measures throughout the trial rather than reacting to the final outcome after 12 months. But having said that, I certainly support the alternative motion submitted by our South West councillors in the alternative that's been circulated. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Councillor Pitty.
Just a comment, if I may. Just following on from Councillor Vinciullo's concern of this opportunity, I think it is important to gauge with the community the next time this comes to council to get a more broad view of what the community would like to see from a possible e-rideable trial here at the City of Joondalup. Sometimes when we don't go out for full community consultation, we get a very small portion of the community that's very vocal, and then we don't hear from what the entire community would like to see.
Thank you. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Firstly, I'd just like to ask if we could vote on these points separately. Thank you. Look, e-scooters have surged in popularity. They are convenient, but their rapid adoption brings significant concerns that merit serious consideration. Firstly, one of the primary dangers of electric scooters is the risk of accidents. These scooters often travel at speeds that can exceed 25 kilometres an hour when they're privately owned, noting that they are obviously limited with the rental facilities. This is substantial and must be considered. A lot of these rentables are not wearing helmets. Instead, they hang them on the side of the handlebars when they log on, and off they go. In urban environments where scooters frequently share space with pedestrians, this speed can result in serious collisions and resulting accidents for inexperienced riders. With the loss of balance and control, it increases the likelihood of falls and crashes. The simple fact is that when people are riding e-scooters, the skill level of many of these riders is unknown. Additionally, the infrastructure for electric scooters is inadequate. It often is, with many cities not yet have adapted their roads, sidewalks or bike lanes to accommodate these vehicles. E-scooters are mostly designed with smaller wheels. In the case of the rental market scooters, they range between 8 and 10 inches. These wheels are unlike bike, car or motorcycle wheels, and the size difference makes every little pothole crack a very real danger to the rider and those around the rider. This mismatch between scooter traffic and infrastructure creates hazardous conditions. Riders may find themselves navigating poorly maintained sidewalks, crossing intersections without proper signals, or even riding on roads where they are vulnerable to cars. Another danger lies in the scooter's design and maintenance. Poorly maintained scooters or those that have been damaged can pose significant risks. Issues such as malfunctioning brakes, low tire pressures, defective lights can drastically impair a rider's ability to safely maneuver that scooter. The proliferation of rental scooters, often left scattered around cities, can be exacerbated by these problems, as many users may not check the scooter's condition before using them. Safety concerns also extend to pedestrians. Scooters can move quickly and quietly, making them difficult for pedestrians to notice. Instances of scooters weaving through crowds or being left in obstructed positions can lead to accidents, injuries, and potentially death. In some cases, the abrupt appearance of a scooter can startle pedestrians, especially those with disabilities or those who are distracted, leading to potentially dangerous situations. To mitigate these dangers, several measures can be taken, but as yet, the City of Joondalup, I feel, has not got those measures in place. Enhanced regulations and consistent enforcement are also crucial. This is something that is already strained and stretched wobble. We could not possibly monitor or enforce, and the simple fact is those riders of those e-scooters know it. Educating riders on safe practices, including wearing helmets and adhering to traffic laws, can reduce the incidence of accidents. At the briefing session, I requested information as to the safety training that is provided to potential users of e-scooters. The resulting information that I received was lacking and of a poor standard. At best, was most representative of a company waiver in disguise, one where all the boxes were ticked and the company was released of all liability should accident or death arise from their product. Additionally to all of this, if the COJ was to approve this trial program, it would all need additional resources from the city by way of City of Joondalup employees being tasked with the implementation and monitoring of a privately owned company where the ratepayers bear the costs and the private company reaps the rewards. So in conclusion, while e-scooters offer many benefits, including reduced traffic congestion, their dangers cannot be overlooked and should not be overlooked. Addressing these risks through improved infrastructure, regulation and education is essential for ensuring that the benefits of the electric scooters can be enjoyed safely by everyone. At this point, I don't believe we are there as a city. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thanks for you, Mr. Mayor. I'll just make some general comments. I do drive around the whole of the metropolitan area extensively, and I see a lot of these high e-scooters, and I have to say there's a great disparity between the usage of them seasonally. So during the summer in the Perth CBD, for example, they're heavily used, but during the current winter, I very rarely see anybody riding them, but I do see plenty of them sitting around on the side of the street. And anecdotally, I do see a lot of dumping still going on, so inappropriate dumping of e-scooters after the rider's completed. Having said all that, I'm certainly open to a trial of using e-scooters on our coastline, and the reason for that primarily is because it would facilitate tourists and young people to be able to go safely between, say, Scarborough and Hillarys, which I think would be a great thing because that route is not particularly well covered by public transport at this point in time. Having said that, I'm mindful of the views of ward councillors in that area and happy to support their views. The proposal before us has an option for doing a trial in June Club CBD. I'm very much against that. As a Northport councillor, I'm responsible for the June Club CBD. The fact is that the area of our CBD that the trial is supposed is very small. Everywhere is walkable and everywhere is covered by the current free cat bus service. So I don't see big advantages in having it there, but I do see the prospect of dumping in our CBD, just like the shopping trolleys, not being a great look. So I will close it there. But as I say, I'm generally supportive of the views of the ward councillors in the coastal area where this trial would be of most benefit. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Just a question first. If this motion passes, and it's for the administration, point two, which speaks of micro-mobility options, how would that be interpreted? What is considered a micro-mobility option, and does that include e-scooters?
Mr. Walker?
Thank you for the question. Through the Mayor, yes, micro-mobility does include everything, and it does include e-scooters, so bicycles, other personal mobility devices, e-rideables. It does even include walking, so it gives the option for the city to be able to explore options that might be beyond e-scooters and include e-rideables and other options.
Thank you. And a follow-up question. It was stated walking, yes, people can already walk for the last mile, so this would primarily be interpreted to be e-scooters, e-bikes. Is that correct?
Mr. Walker?
Thank you for the question. Through the Mayor, no, I think referring to my answer to my previous question, not exclusively, no. There is bicycles. We heard a discussion about bicycles earlier on, and it could be other forms of e-rideables other than e-scooters itself.
Thank you. I'll just move to some comments. I appreciate the clarification that micro-mobility can mean more than e-scooters. I will be supporting point one of the motion, which is not to support an e-scooter shared scheme. I will not be supporting point two, which seems to have a similar type of effect as going forward with an e-scooter shared scheme, which asks the CA to investigate first and last mile micro-mobility, which a significant portion of that I think will be e-rideables, e-scooters, and of course there's other elements which will be considered in that, walking or bicycles, but I presume the focus will likely to be on e-rideables of some form. And then point three, I will be supporting. And the reason why I have for this is that, first of all, as far as the e-scooter scheme, it was said earlier that with some of these decisions, it can be helpful to have public consultation. And I think that was Councillor Pizzey, and I agree with that. However, I always think about, my perspective at least, is that when we think about what would the public be consulted on, the public would think generally on a higher level, would they like to have e-scooters on the dual-use path on the coast? However, to me, that doesn't help me make a judgment whether there should be, because the primary objection I see to this proposal is around safety and whether the rules themselves will be enforced. And what I've seen when this, when we had Councillor Hutton's motion come to the council meeting a couple of months ago about advocating to the state government and the WA police for there to be a stricter enforcement of e-rideable rules for e-scooters, that motion, if I recall correctly, did not succeed. And some of the comments which were reflected on at the time is that the WA police do not have the resources to implement currently the regulations that are in place for people that are riding e-scooters. And the primary concern, of course, with an e-scooter scheme is the safety component. And it comes down to the practical elements. A couple of months ago, on the way to a council meeting, I saw some teenagers which were riding the wrong way on a road. At the same time, they were also trying to get a selfie of themselves, which might have been enjoyable for them, but also not very helpful from a safety perspective for motorists. But so there's lots of concerns that do occur, and just going around the district and especially going to the city of Stirling, just because there are safety elements that may be part of the apps that are connected to the e-scooter schemes, such as speed limitations, it doesn't mean that the person riding the device is riding it correctly or safely, that they're following the rules. And it doesn't seem to be that the rules are readily enforced. So To me, that weights quite strongly even against investigating further mobility options until that's been overcome. But also in a practical sense, there's also the stopping distances of that of these scooters. If they're going 25 kilometres on a dual-use path, the coastal paths, that to me indicates that there's a significant chance of an increase in injury. If we have a greater proportion of these scooters on the dual-use paths, it means that the average speed of the path will increase, which means that there'll be a change of behaviour from people being mostly walking, running, and a proportion of cycling. It means there's going to be a change of the type of people that will be on that path. So slow walkers would possibly not want to use those paths. And then there's infrastructure concerns, as Councillor O'Neill raised as well, is that are all the blind corners sorted out for if we're going to be increasing the average speed on these paths of people on e-scooters or other e-rideables. So for me, I would support, as I said, not going ahead with an e-scooter scheme, but I can't support number two because I don't think that we have at this time overcome all the possible infrastructure concerns that we have. And secondly, we can't guarantee that the rules will be enforced by the WA Police. They just simply don't have the resources to do it. And the commentary that we've received from the police, at least I've heard, is that if there is more enforcement than of the e-scooter rules, then it means that other crimes that need to be deterred, that they won't have resources to deal with that. So there's a lot of pressures that are continued. So at this time, I don't think we should go ahead. Thank you.
Further comments? Councillor Raftus?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll speak on the item put forward. I do support item one. I think at this time there's been a request for information which haven't come through to satisfy our requirements, so happy to support that. On two, probably like to see, given the time of this coming forward, perhaps come back as a new notice of motion, perhaps, with some greater definition and clarity around what it would entail. I think it's a bit vague at the moment, and I'd rather give it some better direction to the administration as to what's intended by it. Three, on that side of things, yeah, look, I think there needs to be more around it. Safety is an issue. How the government might tackle it is a massive task for them. Probably don't see them tackling it with any sense of enthusiasm, but it is a challenge for them as part of being able to implement a scooter shared scheme perhaps in the future. So, happy to see something progress in the future. Thanks.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Tesser.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will be supporting Councillor Hamilton Prime's alternate motion. I believe that e-rideables are so convenient that it's almost inevitable that they will be a future part of city activity. My main concern is that, and it's been broached by other councillors, that the department that is responsible for enforcement of rules is the police department, of course, and there's a question over limited resources being available currently, not only to monitor e-rideables, e-riders' behaviour. I think extra study will provide the confidence we need to implement a strategy that will ensure genuine willingness on the police to engage with e-riders, to ensure that they wear helmets, they don't exceed speed limits. I am encouraged by the fact that Walga and would you believe that my hearing aids are now engaging with me and answering questions which I didn't ask.
You seem to be picking up a radio frequency there, Councillor Chester. I can hear some feedback.
Anyway, to continue on, I am encouraged by Walga and the West Australian Road Safety Commission launching a mass media campaign to ensure that e-riders and the public at large understand that there are rules that need to be complied with. My biggest concern really is the extreme vulnerability of e-riders. You know, they're mainly I've got to say, young people who think they're bulletproof. We know they're not, but they think they are. I could think of nothing worse than hitting one inadvertently. So we really got to ensure before we implement this with confidence, we need to be absolutely sure that the rules will be adhered to. So that's my current position, but I will support the alternate motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Chester. I'll just make a couple of very brief comments, really prompted by what the Deputy Mayor said. I'm supporting Councillor Hamilton Prime's motion as put forward, but something that hasn't been picked up as much in everyone's comments, although it's clear intent of the meeting, but Deputy Mayor did pick up on, which is the importance of transport connections up and down our coast and alternative transport connections up and down our coast. I do notice South West Ward councillors who presented this, who have Sorrento, Hillarys and Callaroo as part of their ward, and where I've supported this motion previously, or motions around this previously to consider this, it's been for me primarily driven about facilitating access up and down our coast, which is something that public transport does not do currently. So assuming from the comments that I've heard that this motion will be supported, and that would mean that the e-scooter shared scheme doesn't progress at this time, I just want to acknowledge the work that officers have done in putting this together and encourage officers of the city to continue to investigate transport options up and down the coast. We had, for example, the Sunset Coast Tourer that came out during COVID years, was a phenomenal success. Initiatives like that I do still very much think are worth exploring, not just up to Hillarys, but to a future Ocean Reef Marina, which will be opening in current years, and even as far north as Burns Beach as that progresses. So for my view, irrespective of what's decided here on this specific motion, coastal transport, particularly through the summer months, I do think is important to our community, and I think there's an openness to suggest to explore new initiatives. One great example that we had there for a few years, but there may also be other examples, so please keep up the good work on that. Councillor Hamilton Prime, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I thank my colleagues and fellow councillors for their commentary, and also, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to acknowledge the City Officer's hard work thus far. But I believe there is still room to get this perfect because we are a city that leads from the front, and we've acknowledged that a lot of other councils have been doing some great work, but I believe that we can have potentially the most ideal model given our city and the potential benefits, not only to our residents, but from a tourism perspective, for activating our beautiful coastline and our beautiful city. Thank you, councillors. I think I'm heartwarming by that. We're going to obviously not proceed with the trial, but that there is appetite to potentially look at it in the future. Also like to encourage e-scooter operators to actually be proactive in this space and actually engage with the community and communities they choose to or might wish to locate in or have rideshare schemes, and actually engage with council and councillors, because I think having that proactive engagement, especially considering the recent articles and publications in the paper about phantom scooters and those issues, there needs to be a lot of work to be done, especially within the community, to repair a lot of the initial missteps that have happened and occurred in trials, such as e-scooter dumping and things like that. I think there's a lot of work from the operator's perspective to repair some of the trust in the community about how fantastic these things can be, but obviously, like everything else in life, there is a risk to things, and and unfortunately, there is always a minority group within a community that do not operate these vehicles appropriately or responsibly. But I hope that, you know, with education and better engagement, that in time it can get better and safer, which I think is a good thing for everyone. So I'd like to thank councillors for their support. I think as an innovative city, this is an important project, but we must get this right. And at this time, it's just not right. We need to have that further investigation and communication with the community and stakeholders, but I believe that in the future it would have a great benefit to our city, and as a city who prides itself on innovation, I encourage councils to support the alternate. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Council, I will put part one of the motion and ask you to cast your votes.
declare the voting closed and part one is carried. I'll put part two of the motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and part two is carried, and I'll put part three of the motion and also ask you to cast your votes. And the screen resets.
Thank you.
Declare voting closed and that is carried. Thank you. Item 12.6, status of council decisions. Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move the item as tabled, thanks.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Seconded Councillor Fishwick. Councillor Raptors.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a follow-up question from a briefing session. In terms of are we able to get a better clarity around the timing for the report on legal actions other than just before or by December 2024?
Thank you. I'll just ask if the manager for that area, sorry, Ms. Temple, if you could just make room. No, no, I'm not asking if Christine. Thank you.
3, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for that question, Councillor. We're currently working through that request, myself and the General Counsel, and hoping to have it before the end of the year. It will definitely be November.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you for that. I'll just speak quickly on it. I would hope it'd be earlier. I would understand that we will be providing such information to our auditors as part of our annual process, and I would imagine be fairly on in the audit process. So it concerns me is that an external organisation is able to get that information before we are as internal members. And the fact that the report's still being presented and such matters would continually change. So would it ever be up to date? The fact is the report was requested a good time ago. It should be something that's important and we should be getting presented to us on a more timely basis. So I would ask that we get some slightly accelerated standing before the OAG perhaps in getting such information made available to us. But thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Raftus. Councillor Fishwick, does anybody else wish to speak to the motion? If no other speakers, noting the request of the mover, I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and that item is carried. Next, we have item 12.9, Outcomes of Community Consultation, Environment Strategy, Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move the recommendations as they appear in the report. Thank you.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder for that motion? Seconded, Councillor O'Neill. Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you. The newly drafted 10-year environmental strategy, 2024 through 2034, focuses on 4 major elements of the environment which impact on the city, namely biodiversity, water, climate change and waste management. In the strategy, each of these key elements, and I commend the work of the city, because the elements now have their own annual performance measures, as you will find on pages 16, 19, 23 and 26 in the report. The upside of the report having those detailed performance measures means that now the city has got a format, if you like, of performance measures that can provide a much broader and more comprehensive measure of the city's overall environmental achievements, or otherwise, as the case may be, if they need correcting, but they are there as a measure and in detail. Briefly, I would simply commend the document to the council and support the recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Chester. Councillor O'Neill?
Is that my right?
Thank you. Councillor Chester, microphone if you don't mind. Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Kingston?
Thank you. Look, just briefly, there's a lot of very positive work that the city's natural areas teams do and all the way up to the strategic planning for the environment. However, as far as the current environmental strategy before us and then also looking at the comments from the members of the public, to me, I will be foreshadowing that it go to a further strategy session and developing further KPIs for it. And the reason for that is although the plan does at a higher level, does address over the long term trying to improve the environmental factors in the district, to me there's a lack of clarity around some of the key terms about what is trying to be achieved. And then secondly, as far as targets and measures, many of the targets themselves, well, they aren't strictly speaking targets, is that many of them are just measures where a certain element is reported back, so the amount of certain things consumed or used, but it doesn't necessarily have a corresponding, just trying to get to the page, it doesn't necessarily have a corresponding change in what we are targeting or trying to do. So, for example, when we look at it does report the amount of waste that goes into landfill, and that's to be then measured each year, percentage of residential waste diverted from landfill. But I always think from a performance perspective and as a council, it's about what are we targeting and how do we get there. And some of these measures themselves, in my opinion, I feel are just a little bit high level or don't actually aren't necessarily going to be the key elements on changing or improving environmental factors in particular areas. So there's a lot said about just measuring particular outcomes, and I think measuring is good. I think that's a step in the right direction. But at the same time, I think more of a focus needs to say, over 5 years, what are we trying to specifically achieve, which areas are currently degraded, and how are we going to then move out from areas which are of good quality bushland and improve the surrounding degraded areas, and how are we then strategically targeting that? And then also looking at, what is the percentage of pest species that are declared under the Biosecurity and Agricultural Management Act? Do we have management strategies in place for them? And how are we trying to overall either manage these populations or reduce? So there's, at a high level, there's a lot of positive things that are in here, and I personally think that the city's teams do a good job when it comes to the environment. It's just, for me, how the strategy is laid out and what is specifically to be achieved over the long term, and then the lack of targets, I think, is a bit of a shortcoming. I'd like to see some of that addressed in a further report, but I understand. We'll see where that goes. So I'll be foreshadowing that, but that'll first require the motion of stands to be voted against.
Thank you, Councillor. Further comments, Councillor O'Neill?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Look, I think it's positive steps forward. As councillors, we get the opportunity to look over these things and make these decisions. Taking these steps forward is an important thing, and as Councillor Kingston pointed out, there is obviously a few things there that need to be maybe looked at further on down the track. That being said, as councillors, if there is those small things or those little performance measures that need to be adopted, or we need to obviously tweak something as we go along the way, I think we can all do that, and we can all work together as a council to do what's in the best interest of the city. Councillor Chester raises some very good points and is very eloquent the way he speaks about it. So I think everyone should sort of get on board and support something like this. As I said, we can always take those smaller steps later on. Let's not take a step back now.
Thank you, Councillor. Further comments? Councillor Vinciullo?
Thank you. Through you, just want to commend the body of work that's gone into this. The city's taken a real proactive approach
to our environmental strategy. There's really exciting and dynamic things on the horizon. It's evident that work's been put in. And I'm sure, as Councillor O'Neill alluded to, as a collective, we can look at anything moving on, but I will be supporting this and I commend the city's efforts.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I too like to concur the comments of Councillor Vinciello and the amazing and incredible hard work the city officers have done to bring the strategy to what it is today. I really do appreciate it, and it's really put the city in a very forward-thinking position. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments, Councillor Raftus?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Question, if I could, please, following on from some of the points raised, through the administration, could they confirm where we could put some specific KPIs for these measures in place? Would that be the corporate plan or any other document? And the process of putting those in place.
Ms. McCurry.
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. The intention of the environment strategy is to provide a high-level framework for the city's approach to environmental management. The more specific measures and targets are actually included in our issue-specific plans. So if we're talking about waste, for example, we have a waste management plan that sets targets. If we're talking about greenhouse gases, we have targets within our draft climate change strategy to address reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. So the more detailed targets and measures are included in those issue-specific plans. The reason we've included them as high-level measures in the environment strategy is because we wanted to provide a high-level framework for our environmental management. We didn't think we needed to duplicate all of the individual targets and measures that we have in those issue-specific plans.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. As a follow-up, could it then be advised what the specific targets are in those documents for the canopy cover in the city and the community satisfaction survey results?
Ms. McCurry.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. There isn't individual targets for all of the measures. That is something we can consider. The development of individual effectiveness and efficiency targets is something that we're working on this year. That's a project in the corporate business plan. We are also, as part of that project, looking at individual indicators for each of the themes in the strategic community plan, environment being one of those. We will have a new set of indicators and targets, if that's what council chooses to endorse, as part of that project. We currently report on all of the targets that we have in our individual plans and strategies through the State of the Environment report. So that is available to council and the community.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. And if you're able to answer, so of the annual performance measures which are documented in this strategy document, which ones do we have set targets for in existence at the moment?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I don't have the exact number on hand, but I can provide that. But I would say that it is all of the ones that relate to our high-level issue-specific plans, so things around groundwater use, scheme water use, greenhouse gas emissions, renewable energy, and waste are the key ones that we have specific council-endorsed targets. And as I mentioned, if we wanted additional measures, that's something we can do through the new project in the corporate business plan.
Councillor, further comments? Councillor Chester, do you wish to close?
Nothing to add, thank you.
Thank you. I'll put that motion, noting Councillor Kingston has foreshadowed, and ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. Declare the vote closed and the motion is carried. Next, we have item 12.11, corporate sponsorship application for Heathridge Carols in the Park 2024. Councillor Fishery.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move my alternate motion that was circulated in the briefing notes pack, which increases the contribution of the city from $17,000 to $20,000. Thank you.
Thank you. So moved. Seconded. Councillor Kingston. Councillor Fishery.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Heathridge Carols in the Park is a beloved and family-friendly community event featuring a range of activities such as a pre-show entertainment, a main carol show, Santa Land activity area, a kids' carol set, and various food vendors and a spectacular fireworks finale. For over now 30 years, this event has been the cornerstone of Christmas celebrations in our region, consistently drawing in over 15,000 attendees each year, which last year's attendance, I think, reached around 17,000. Recognising the event's success and continued growth, the Council resolved at its meeting held in June last year to increase that corporate sponsorship from 13,000 to 20,000, and this decision was primarily driven by the rising costs of staging the event over the past 13 years. Since its inception, the Heathridge Carols in the Park has grown to become Perth's most well-attended carols event, I even think surpassing the City of Perth event in terms of attendance. Despite this significant growth, our sponsorship levels have remained relatively unchanged for over a decade, with last year's adjustment being the only exception, although the administration has now recommended an increase of 4,000 from the originally 13,000 now to 17,000. We are truly fortunate to host this event in Heathridge, which now stands as the largest Christmas carol event in Western Australia. Although it does not fully comply with the metrics in terms of attracting patrons residing outside the city, it's a major big budgeted event that draws people from all walks of life, often bringing families together with three or four generations to enjoy the festivities. Although held in a city park, this event is organised by a dedicated local group and has carefully nurtured over many years. Considering inflation over the past decade, I believe that 20,000 sponsorship is a reasonable contribution to such a valuable community event. As mentioned earlier, our contribution has remained at the same since 2010, except for last year when we decided to increase it by 7,000 to 20,000. My motion is simply to reflect the escalating cost as the event continues to grow. Mr. Mayor and Councillors, I think this is a wonderful opportunity to back the event that resonates so strongly with our residents and ratepayers, and I therefore ask you to support my alternate motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Councillor Kingston.
I reserve my right.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Look, just one thing really quickly is I'm in support of this. It is something that obviously a lot of the local people from the city of Joondalup attend, and increasing this to a smaller amount of $20,000 is nothing when you compare it. You look at 15,000 attendees versus net for a cost of $20,000 versus something similar in attendance levels with the city of Joondalup Motor Fair and things like that. I think this is fantastic. I think we should all be supportive of it.
Thank you for the comments, Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, sir. Question, if I may, to the administration, the rationale for the increase from 13 to 17 between the briefing session and today.
Ms. Macario.
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. Thank you for your question. The additional information that we received from the applicant at the briefing session regarding some of the benefits that were being provided to the city that weren't initially included in the application were then included and a reassessment was undertaken.
Councillor Raftus.
Yes, thank you. I've not been to this event, but I understand and see the results online in terms of social media pictures, and it's obviously very well attended by the community, so must have to get along at some point. But, yeah, happy to see it supported at a similar level to last year. Naturally, if we're going to increase this amount, we should be contemplating where the other side of the ledger false, and we just can't be continually increasing each request that comes to us. So at some point you have to say no to something. So notably there's a large item on the agenda today that we don't really have much pull on, but perhaps when we look at that in the following year we'll be able to make some adjustments on that. But thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Further comments? Councillor Kings.
Thank you. Look, I just want to commend the motion that Councillor Fishwick has put together. I go to this event most years and it's very successful. The park is nearly, Heathridge Park is nearly filled with the number of residents that attend. I expect that there are also residents from outside of the city that attend this. There's some carols of there aren't as many carols events as there used to be. But I'd also like to thank the administration for working with the proponent for this and updating the tables and giving consideration to that. I think we are getting value for money for sponsoring the event at 20,000, given that the number of people that attend, given that this last year over 16,000 people attended this, and by comparison, the Festival of Motoring, we're having attendance figures stated around 20,000, and for that event, of course, it's a very different offering. But, we've sponsored in excess of 300,000. So I think we're getting value for money for this. So I'd encourage everyone to support it.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I too will be supporting this. And I commend Councillor Fishwick in this initiative. I think the Christmas spirit is very much alive and well in the city of Joondalup. And I think this is a very worthy event to fund to the appropriate amount because of the joy it brings to our community. So I can encourage my fellow councillors to support this.
Thank you. Councillor Pizzi.
Yeah, just to say that my family do enjoy this event every year, and that I think it's important for council and the city to support community members when they take on their own initiative to create events like this that support and bring together the whole community. So, I'll be supporting of this.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Nishore.
Yeah, just echoing the sentiment of my fellow councillors, I'll be supporting this. More importantly, obviously, no secret that we're going through tough times at the moment, and when we can bring joy and especially free entertainment on a large scale to our community, we should do so. And I think 20,000 is more than appropriate for this fantastic event, so you'll have my full support.
Thank you for the comments. Just a couple from me, and thank you all the speakers so far. I don't think I've ever really touched on this in a speech before, but one of the reasons I first considered running back in 2005 was there was a bit of a move afoot through local governments, not the City of Joondalup at the time, to push back on Christmas events in their local community and to try and can them. And you see that pop up from time to time in local governments, and I thought that was a key factor in me thinking to run around this place, to run for this place and not in this community, because we support events. We support events in an inclusive way, and Christmas is part of that, just as we, the council, support the Navarang Navadi Festival, which will be held at Joondalup Arena in the coming months, which is the largest Hindu festival in the city. Indeed, I made comments earlier this year. We have a very large and diverse city, and whatever we can do to meet the interests of our community members in terms of community events and trying to spread it as well as possible through our large community is important. And when you talk about areas that our community engage back, Christmas carols is a big one. Heathridge Carols in particular, it is the largest carols event in Western Australia and has been for many years. So our community vote with their feet. As Councillor O'Neill said, this is predominantly aimed at the local community, but the level of support has just grown year on year, and that brings with it challenges. Indeed, reference was made earlier, I think from Councillor Fishwick, about Perth's. Perth's Carols event, which has only just restarted in recent years, is about half the numbers of this one. It's actually the same Joondalup-based volunteers that run the Perth events, because when the City of Perth wanted to resurrect carols in the Supreme Court Gardens, they went to the proponents here, and my understanding is they've offered them some $37,000 over a year for 3 years to try and resurrect the Perth one, which is about $32,000 of cash sponsorship and just over $4,000 in kind. So it's really a compliment and a recognition of what we have here in Joondalup and being able to support it staying within our council. It's a point of pride for me that the City of Joondalup continues to be home to the largest carols event in WA, and I hope that continues for many years to come, just as we support other areas of our community. Further comments? Councillor Fishwick, do you wish to close?
Oh, very briefly, Mr. Mayor, just in reviewing the metrics for this event, it emphasises bringing visitors from outside the city, but the primary audience for this event is our own Joondalup residents. So the fact that the majority of the 17,000 attendees are local should not deter us from sponsoring this event. On the contrary, it underscores how deeply our residents value this celebration, consistently setting aside time each year to participate in ever-increasing numbers. Heathridge Carols in the Park is the largest single event in our city, held annually at Heathridge Oval, and it's just right. It's just the right thing to do for our city to support this event as Christmas approaches. The modest increase from 3,000 in sponsorship from the recommended 17,000 in the report to 20 is merely keeping pace with the operational running costs. This is such a wonderful opportunity to bring an event that resonates so strongly with our residents and ratepayers rather than focusing solely on external visitors to our city. I therefore respectfully ask you to support the my alternate motion. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and the item is carried. Thank you. Item 12.14, Financial Activity Statement for June 2024. Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move the item as tabled.
So moved. I have a seconder. Seconded Councillor Fishwick. Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of queries following on from the briefing session. Can, through you, first of all, regarding the Craigie Leisure Centre, do we have a time frame on having that reported back to elected members?
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The report is still with the manager of Leisure and Cultural Services. It will come through to ELT, I expect, in the next 3 to 4 weeks. As soon as we have it through ELT, we'll put it to a strategy session for elected members. I would hope to have it completed no later than October.
Thank you.
Councillor Raftus.
Follow up on the employment costs, which we did exceed the budget. Just seeking clarity, have we got any accrual going back any further than the adjustment that was made in May to cover off on the potential increase under the EBA?
Director.
Through Mr. Mayor, I don't believe so, but I won't be able to answer that conclusively until the enterprise agreement negotiations are complete. But given the status of negotiations at this point, I don't believe there will be an accrual.
Councillor Raffles?
So I'm just seeking clarity. So we don't have an accrual in there at the moment with the amount that exceeds budget?
Director.
Through Mr. Mayor, it is likely that the amount will exceed budget. I don't believe we'll be allowed to accrue it because the decision to award the pay increase has not yet been made. So the expense will land in the year at which the decision is made.
Councillor.
Thank you. Further question on the funds from Catalina. In terms of that $14.8 million, do we have a date on when we expect that to be received?
Director.
Through Mr. Mayor, we expect it imminently, before September 30, which is traditionally when CRC would have their financials audited.
Councillor. Further comments? If not, if there's no other speakers, I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and the motion is carried. Next, we have item... that's the motion's carried. Thank you. Item 12.15, list of payments made during the month of June. Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Speer. Move the item as tabled, please.
Thank you. Seconded Councillor Fishwick. Councillor Raftus.
Thank you.
The speaker seems to be picking up radio waves again. That's never happened before, but Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. Question through you in terms of, it was page 691 of the briefing session, the Mindari Regional Council, the charge for governance and administration fees, $71,000. Can you clarify the content of that, particularly the costs of our two representatives?
Director.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'll take the question on notice, but by way of initial answer, the Mindari Regional Council separated out the gate fee and administration fee some years ago, but we'll take that question on notice and provide a detailed breakdown for elected members.
Councillor, any further comments or questions? If not, I'll put this motion and ask you to cast your votes.
declare the voting closed and the item carried. Next is 12.16, card transactions for the month of June 2024. Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move the item as tabled, please.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. It's further follow-up question from the briefing session. In terms of the purchasing of the prepaid cards, the query was how are those transactions going to be accountable back to the elected members of council, as the transactions on these cards are required to be, and if the purchase of cards alleviates and takes those transactions to not being reported, how do they get come back to meet the requirements?
Director Humphrey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Prepaid credit cards or gift cards are used in one of two ways. One is they're purchased for prizes, and those are indicated in the briefing pack for elected members. In that instance, they are accounted for as they're purchased as prizes. If we're using prepaid credit cards for supply of goods and services, we account for it the same way we do a cash advance or petty cash. I have also spoken with the internal auditor informally. We're working on ways that that can be reported back to elected members in a more timely fashion.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a comment on the matter that there's a requirement to report these card transactions to the council. That's why we get it. To allow the purchase of cards which take the transactions away from the report that is presented to council and to the public, the ratepayers, circumvents a control method process in place. And to say it's then accounted for some other way, it again needs to come back to this process of where it's supposed to come. So seeking clarity as how that information comes back to meet the requirements that it's is intended to be accounted for. So I understand the petty cash. For petty cash, we are given an amount. We don't necessarily see a sum and how that's broken down, and that's great as long as there's a process in place. These ones are the requirements to detail the individual transactions and credit cards, and that if a sum is made available through another card, then that, those transactions should come back through the same process to meet those requirements. So that's all I'm seeking to happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Similar to Councillor Raftus' statements there in relation to the like cash cards, credit cards and Big W cards and things, it seems to be, just from looking at over the last few months, that it's sporadic. There's not really any sort of designated amount each month, and I would like to see a little bit more clarity around this, which I'd like to discuss with the city at a later stage and bring maybe something towards council to tighten up these measures. People are employed for a certain salary budget, whatever it is, and yeah, there's obviously little bits where people get rewarded in every industry. However, the amounts that I'm seeing with these cards and the explanations that I'm hearing across the room, they don't really add up to me. So I think we obviously need to tighten this down a little bit and get some more clarity.
Thank you for the comments. Councillor Raftus, wish to close. I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and that item is carried. Council, just a couple of housekeeping items. I've just had, I'll treat it as an addendum to your initial declaration of interest, Councillor Hamilton Primes. I think you already declared one on item 12.13, but there's a further interest that may affect impartiality as Councillor Hamilton Primes' husband and her are members of the AMG Car Club in Perth. I also, and this is on me, Councillor Hamilton Prime, I need an explanation for decision 12.5 being e-scooters, and Councillor Fishwick, I'll need the same for Heathridge. Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So in terms of a reason to not proceed with an e-rideable share service to allow for further investigation of micro-billing opportunities and potential in the city.
Thank you. And Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In accordance with Regulation 11DA of the Local Government Administration Regulations 1996, the reason Council made its decision was, which was significantly different from the what the Administration recommended, is to reflect the increasing cost of this successful event over recent years and acknowledges that the Council sponsorship for 2024 is the same amount as in 2023 of 20,000. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. I have you, Councillor Fishwick. The next item is 12.19, construction of the Percydoll Youth Outdoor Facilities.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move the officer's recommendation as contained on page 146 of the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Seconded, Councillor Hamilton Prime. Councillor Fishwick.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The submission from Phase 3 Landscape represents the best value for the city. The company has a proven track record in successfully completing major landscape construction projects, including skate parks and BMX tracks for local governments. Their extensive experience makes them a reliable choice for delivering a high-quality outcome for the Percy Doyle Outdoor Youth Facility. In addressing the cost increase, it is crucial to acknowledge the impact of current market conditions on the project's capital cost. The original estimate of $8.5 million provided some 14 months ago has now increased to $9.6 million, reflecting a $1.1 million rise. This change is not unexpected given the ongoing escalation and volatility in the construction market. The additional costs are due to the difference between the contract value in March last year, which was estimated by our quantity surveyor, and the value now of the preferred tender at today's costings, which highlights the need now to secure a fixed price contract to provide this hugely community supported project from further market fluctuations. We do need to secure the project's future, so by accepting Phase 3 Landscapes tender under Option 1, the city secures a fixed price contract, effectively shielding the project from future market volatility. This decision ensures that the project can proceed without risk or further cost escalations or delays by re-tendering. Moreover, by accepting Option 1 will enable the city to also seek an additional $950,000 of funding from the federal government, thereby reducing our financial impact on the city to just $178,000. This funding opportunity is critical to minimising the overall financial burden on the city's budget. Delaying the project by selecting Option 2 would result in significant delays, as the project would need to be redesigned and retendered, causing an estimated 9-month setback. Such a delay would have severe financial implications, including an increase in charges from the appointed skate and bike park contractors or delays in their current construction schedule. These additional costs would further strain the city's resources and budget. Furthermore, the federal government's Pay Our Way funding grant of $950,000 is contingent upon delivering the project as scoped in Option 1. Any deviation from the scope, such as removing the roller disco, would likely result in the loss of this critical funding. More importantly, Lotteries West's $3 million contribution is conditional, I repeat, conditional, on delivering the current scope, and any changes could jeopardise their funding of $3 million as well. Retendering the project would expose the city to significant market risks, including further cost escalations and potentially reducing competition, given that only two responses were received from the 52 organisations accessing the tender. The chances of receiving better bids in a retendering process are very, very, very slim. Delays would also damage our reputation, as the community has extremely high expectations for the timely completion of the Duncraig Adventure Hub. Any delay would negatively impact community satisfaction and trust in the city's ability to deliver on its major commitments. In conclusion, accepting the tender from Phase 3 Landscape under Option 1 is the most prudent and beneficial course for this council. This decision secures the project's future, minimises financial risk, and ensures the timely delivery of the much-anticipated Percy Doyle Outdoor Youth Facility. I urge you to support the tender to Phase 3 to move this vital project forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to concur Councillor Fishwick's commentary about this particular project. There is high expectation in the community, especially within the south of the city, to deliver this project as described and alluded to in the imagery, and I think anything less would be, quite frankly, a crying shame. And I know it's a hugely long-awaited asset for young people and youth recreation, and I believe that the significant amount of viral coverage that the city got when it was released is particularly important to maintain the city's reputation as delivering projects as they are depicted in the public realm at that point in time. Councillor Fishwick alluded to the contingency, the condition of the grant funding. I think that's an important point that's sometimes forgotten in these sort of big projects. It's important that once, you know, funding, external funding has been achieved, that we do everything we can within our power to ensure that we maintain it and we don't lose it due to potentially re-tendering for a project and even changing what was originally the original scope. I also like to mention Councillor Fishwick's continued leadership in this project. It's important we move this forward and continue delivering these sort of projects for our community. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments, Councillor Vinciullo.
Thank you, through you. I concur with what I've heard thus far, and I will definitely be supporting Councillor Fishwick and thank him for his commentary. Look, these things happen, market impacts and volatility. Some things are out of our control. It's unfortunate, it happens, but based on the federal funding that's in play here, it's imperative that we stay the course and deliver what's expected by our community and definitely expected by the residents in the south. So I will be getting behind Councillor Fishwick on this one. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I will be seeking an amendment, but a question, if I may, first.
If you're seeking an amendment, you need to move it straight away.
Okay. Well, my amendment would be on point one, and it would be subject to the Play Our Way grant being approved or in the process of being... I'm not sure how the Play Our Way grant works in terms of the funds being granted and then distributed. So the general idea of it is that the Play Our Way grant is approved prior to the tender acceptance or in the process of its final stage or...
I can't, much given. If you just hold off, please. I'll just do the mechanics and you'll get a chance to speak to it.
Thank you.
Please wait. That's the amendment. Do I have a seconder for the amendment? Seconded Councillor Kingston. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. The reason I'm seeking this amendment is obviously to safeguard the city from those excessive funds being wasted. I know that things blow out, but we do have an opportunity to obviously get a grant approved for us, which would cover a bulk sum of the excess that we were originally expecting. It's just that I'm trying to look at the ways that we can obviously make sure that the ratepayers aren't left with the footing the bill every time that somebody decides to increase the prices or, you know, something doesn't go the way it was originally stated and then council moves forward with something and then we get a surprise down the road. So it's pretty simple and it's just to basically safeguard ourselves.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston.
Could I ask a question first before speaking? I guess it's a straightforward one to the administration. Is this doable? So making the tender subject to the grant being approved, and do we have a timeline of when the grant is to be approved?
I'll go to Director Humphrey on the mechanics of accepting a tender subject to a third-party grant, and then I'll go to Ms. Macario on the grant process. Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the city can accept a tender on any grounds it so chooses. If this amendment were to pass, the impact would be that we would advise the successful tenderer that they were the preferred tenderer, but that the tender would not be awarded until such time as the grant was determined. They would have the ability to amend their price or withdraw at that point, at which point we didn't have to report that back to council if they did.
Ms. Macario?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just looking to see if I can find the timeline for this grant, but I do know that it's one that we're currently working on, so it's in progress. I would just need to find the timelines in terms of the deadline and the application assessment process.
But as a general principle?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, it's a competitive funding grant, so we have very little control over the outcome. I know that the grants are very popular and competitive. We are quite successful in our grant funding, but we wouldn't have any certainty that we would be successful in any grant that we apply for.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston.
Just broadly on the question of, do we know roughly what quarter the grants will likely to be concluded? If we don't know the exact date, do we think it'll be end before the end of the year or
is it carry
of next year?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I would have to take that on notice as I don't have that information right in front of me.
Councillor?
And just one final question on the mechanics. So if it is subject to this particular amendment, so if we are not successful in the Play Away grant, will a further report be generated to the council and for the project to proceed with that? I'm just wondering if...
Or would we need to go out to tender and
it's entirely
Director Humphrey.
I think, Mr. Mayor, to reduce the scope of the tender, I believe we'd have to decline all tenders and advertise a second time. With regards to it coming back to council, the budget review will come back to council, and I consider it unlikely that the project will be complete prior to the budget review in February next year. So there would be scope to amend or defer the scope of works if the tender, even if the tender was accepted today and the grant were not to be awarded, there would still be an opportunity for council to either delay or stage part of the project at budget review or consider a change to the scope of works at that point.
Councillor?
I'll just leave it there.
Further comments on the amendment? Councillor, Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thanks for your Mayor. Just noting that with all tenders and amendments, we generally get an officer's comments, and given that this is coming to us right now and we have had some questions and some answers, I would really appreciate if I can ask the question for a definitive officer's comment with regard to the specific amendment. Thank you.
Yep. I'll go both to Director Humphrey and then Ms. Macario if she wishes to add to it. Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, it would be an unusual step for a council to accept a tender based on a condition it cannot control, such as the acceptance of a grant. That being said, it's not impossible. We just have to advise the successful tenderer that they are the preferred respondent, but the contract wouldn't be awarded until such time as the grant outcome was known. As I said, the risk that we have, as a response to an earlier question, is that in the meantime, if the prices were to change, a tenderer would be within their rights to either withdraw from the process or request a price variation accordingly, which the city would then need to consider.
Deputy Mayor.
Okay, my view on...
Sorry, I did... Yeah. Ms. Beccaria. My apologies, Ms. Beccaria.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. As Director Humphrey has said, we have very little control over the outcome of the grant, so it would be a risk making that a condition. As I've mentioned, I would also need to ascertain what the timeframes would be in terms of us receiving information of the grant outcome.
Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thanks for those answers. So my view on this is that if this amendment provided us with upside but no downside, I'd be happy to support it. But in response to the comments made from the officers, I see that there are significant potential downsides from taking this amendment. So, therefore, I don't support this amendment. It will be unfortunate for everyone if the grant is unsuccessful. But I think the best approach is to take the approach that is before us, well, before the amendment, which was basically to adjust the budget and move forward. And fingers crossed, and with the good work that the city does in seeking grants is to be optimistic and hopeful that we would receive the grant. So I don't support the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Rushes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Question, just seeking clarity that was comment made. So the $3 million government funding on this requires the delivery of the full project as scoped?
That's a question for the primary motion, not the amendment, Councillor Rushes.
Councillor Raftus.
From my point of view, it impacts how I would, you know, vote on this way. But I'll wait for that response then. I'll get back to it.
Thank you for the comments, Councillor Pizzi.
Can I just ask or have some clarification of this specific grant and what part of the play space it is going to be focused for?
Mr. Hanley.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The Play Our Way grant funding is contingent on the female aspect of the project that we're delivering, which is in engaging with female youth in providing them a safe and inclusive area to socialise. It tends that if it's an important part of the funding grant, and if we take away the role of disco or reduce our components of that area, then that would then reduce our chances to get that funding. Or actually, we wouldn't be eligible for it.
Councillor?
And just touching on something Director Humphreys was saying earlier. So without this amendment, to say this amendment did go ahead, if that grant was not given, would you come back to the council to ask for more money to get that area put in? Or at that point, could we say, let's not go ahead with that section?
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Mayor, if the resolution is passed without the amendment, the project can go ahead. The budget would be amended. The total expenditure would be increased. What we'd be required to do as Office of Standards, come back to Council with changes to the budget at the mid-year budget review to account for the overspend on this project, which would then be reflected in reducing or delaying other projects to accommodate. So we wouldn't be asking for a net increase in funding from ratepayers. What the impact would be would be other projects would be either delayed or amended to accommodate the increase in cost.
Councillor Pizzi.
So this project wouldn't be amended, it would be a knock-on effect to other projects.
Director.
Through Mr. Mayor, Council could, at mid-year review, receive a report from the Director of Infrastructure Services about what cost savings there could be for the project. That is an option. But as the recommendation is written, it would likely be that it would be other projects that would have to accommodate either a reduction or a delay so that the budget can remain balanced.
Councillor?
And do we know how often we've been granted these kind of grants in the past as opposed to not being granted? Do we have a percentage?
Director.
Or Mr. Hamling.
Or Ms. Macario. Ms. Macario.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I don't have the exact numbers on me, but we are normally very successful in our large funding applications. This particular grant is actually a two-phase grant, so there was an expression of interest and then the city was invited to put a full application in. So that is a good sign. Not all applicants are invited to do a full application past the EOI stage. But again, it's a very competitive grant program, so there is always a risk that we wouldn't be successful.
Further comments? Councillor Raftus?
A question, if I can, Mr. Mayor. A briefing session sought clarity around the size of the roller disco area, the roller skating area that was quoted for this grant. The answer included a range of other things such as a bike skills track, etc. Can that be clarified? What is the area that's covered by this grant and how big exactly is the actual area for roller skating?
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The appropriate area is 1,175 square metres, which we said will accommodate other areas, including a beginner bicycles track and a graded rollerblading circuit. It's all integrated. It is all blended into the one facility, and so it's just not a there's no definitive lines of when one thing stops and the other thing starts. It's all integrated into that community hub area where we're inviting the community to obviously participate in the rollerblading but other activities which are associated with that.
Thank you. Councillor Aftis.
Further question okay on that. Is there any safety issues with having a beginner bike skills track blend in with a rollerblading circuit and roller skating for what would think cater for older people?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Through the design process, all the appropriate safety areas and demarcation zones have been included in the design, and it's fully compliant.
Thank you. Further comments, Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If the grant payaway is not forthcoming, then the risk is we have to delay and then go out to tender. And what you've got to realise here is that such a delay would severely impact on the financial implications, including, of course, you've got the increase in charges from the appointed contractor for the skate and bike park contractors. So their schedule would be delayed. Therefore, they can then come back for damages to the city. So that needs to be considered when you look at this amendment, because what you're going to do is delay it, and they'll have a right under their contract to come back and seek damages. So, therefore, I can't support this, and I think that if you have that grant in there, then you're virtually what you're saying, we're going to go to a retender, which is 9 month delay. So I can't support it. Thank you. And we do have faced the challenge of increasing those costs and damages from those other two contractors. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't think I can give you the call, Councillor.
It's just a question.
Question?
It's on page 143. It says that we risk losing all of Lottery West's $3 million funding, and because that was contingent on the current scope. So just understanding that if we did not receive the Playaway grant, we would still have to pay the same money anyway to receive the $3 million state funding. Is that correct or not, based on that statement? So if we didn't receive the grant and then re-scoped it, would we then lose the Lottery West funding?
Mr. Hanley?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, the Lottery West grant is contingent on us delivering the project as was stated in the grant application, which is the full project.
Councillor, I'll make a couple of comments very quickly. I have an aversion to amendments for which we haven't had notice, and this is one of those, mainly because I like to have full officer comment. I'm always happy to decide for or against officer comment, but I like to be informed in that way. The advice that I have received here makes me very nervous about supporting this amendment. We're dealing here with a $5.5 million tender in isolation. There's a $1 million grant on the one side, or close to $1 million from the federal government that's in play. I suspect we have a very high likelihood of getting it. If we don't, we're talking 10% of the project, so it's not the end of the world one way or another, but the state government Lottery West grant in excess of $3 million for a facility like this is not something that I would want to risk for the sake of an amendment that's just come up here. So I won't be supporting the amendment. As Director Humphrey said, it's highly unusual, and just as a practice, I wouldn't like accepting tender subject to entirely third-party actions. So that's the other part of this that makes me not inclined to support it, but I will go to Councillor O'Neill to close.
I have nothing further to add. Everyone's pretty much said what they need to.
Thank you. I'll put the amendment and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed. The amendment is not carried. We revert to the primary motion. Councillors. Councillor Raftis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Look at this project. Obviously, it seems to be well received. The issue of costing is where comes my focus. When we last dealt with this, well, we got a full level of costing was in April 2022, and we were looking at potentially 5.7 for the most expensive option at that point in time. We're now at 9.7. So that's a 70% increase in 4 years' time, in 4 years, considering the design of this place. So I'm not against it. We've ticked off having the skate park and the bike track progressed. What concerns me is the level of expenditure on the surrounding aesthetic aspects, to be argued, or some of the additional features. Do they all fit together? Are we trying to be everything for everyone and fit it into one small area? Is my concern. I certainly think, and it was well supported, that a bike and skate park were definitely needed. Perhaps in my view, we'd like to see those features made larger and a concentrated effort to satisfy those requirements. I'm just concerned that we'll end up with a development that's trying to be everything for everyone and delivers not on that, doesn't deliver for anybody. That's my concern. So, and at this stage, at a rather large increased cost. So we're at 9.7 now, and we don't know where it's going to end up. I'm not sure if the art is factored into it, or hopefully we don't proceed with spending a 1% target on that just to meet some policy. I think the it would qualify as a piece of art without having something else thrown into it. But, yeah, that's my concern at the moment. With this, I'll see it, no doubt. We're going to proceed. We've got some, and on a positive aspect, we've got some funding, so well done to the administration for achieving that. So I think that's a good outcome. But the ability for us to control costs on developments, this and buildings and other aspects, when we start these things, where we're going to end up at the end, we need to have better quality and control over that information coming through, so we're not trying to deal with large variations and budget variations as we go. So what I would like to see come through is, now we've got the additional costs, is that we get updated numbers on the 20-year cash flow and the impact per ratepayer per year numbers that we got in April 22 and how we sit with those now. I don't expect they would be available. If they were available now, that would be appreciated. Because this is a large cost that is delivering for the southern areas, and great that we are representing those suburbs. So, we'll see how this matter progresses, and hopefully it delivers all it is proposed to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments, Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Obviously the cost is one thing. The other thing that I'm concerned about is how the vandalism in the evenings and things like that. Could I get a statement from the city as to how they plan to discourage the younger cohorts from attending there in the evenings and vandalising the place and basically creating a nuisance in the evenings?
Mr. Hamling?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Mayor. Part of the development is that there will be CCTV coverage throughout the site. Plus, with the activation of the area, we expect families to be barbecuing, enjoying themselves well into the evening. And then with the amount of passing traffic and so forth, and the fact that it will be well used by the youth, that they tend to look after the places, so it will not get vandalised.
Councillor?
Thank you. I'm actually seeking in relation to the security of the facility after a period of 10 p.m. Is there other measures that the city is planning?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, besides the CCTV, obviously we have our community safety officers who will be out, and obviously they will also patrol through their normal services. And then we'll just see basically how it goes and what feedback we get provide. And if there are issues that we need to address coming from vandalism, that they'll be addressed at that time.
Mr. O'Neill, Councillor O'Neill, sorry.
That's all right, that's fine. Obviously I'll gear down on this a little bit further then. Is the city planning to use the sound system to deter people in the evening?
Mr. Hamley.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, outside of the event space where it's being used for various purposes, that hasn't been considered at this time.
Councillor.
Thank you. I'm trying to seek some clarity from a statement that was previously made in relation to, if I may be permitted to.
You have the call, Councillor.
The city has previously stated when asked that how it was the measures that the city was putting in place when people are gathering after 10 p.m. And the principal landscape architect advised that there are several approaches the city can use to deter people from gathering after 10 p.m., which includes playing high-pitched sounds through the sound system. So I'm just wondering if that's still an option for the city, or if this is something that the city will equivalently rule out. Just, you know, we have bats, we have, you know, wildlife and an environment there, and high-pitched sounds obviously do more than just, you know, keep the youth away. They also they also do damage our environments in certain ways.
Mr. Hanley.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, that is one option that the city could look at if they if the issues were arising, we were getting vandalism, but that would be on a case-by-case basis, and at this point in time, it would be, could be a measure, but it's we would have to review that as the issues arise.
So,
I just
really quickly, if I could.
I just brought to my attention the notes that you're referring to come from a strategy session, Councillor O'Neill,
yes,
which is confidential.
But you asked me to...
I didn't ask you to do anything, Councillor O'Neill.
I apologise.
Just cautioning you, in those here on the floor, you obviously have other opportunities to ask questions about matters that are raised in strategy sessions. This in a public meeting, you can't refer to those. Councillor O'Neill.
Yeah, I do apologise. That's why I was trying to ask if I could ask those questions. I apologise, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Fishwick, do you wish to close?
Yes, please, Mr. Mayor. In closing, I strongly advocate for accepting the tender from Phase 3 Landscape under Option 1 for the project. The submission from them represents the best value, as I've already iterated, and that they offer expertise and a proven track record necessary to deliver a high-quality outcome. Whilst the cost increase is concerning, you all should understand that this is a reflection of the current market conditions and the volatility of the construction sector. By accepting option one, we secure that fixed price contract that protects this from further market fluctuations and ensures that the project is shielded from those escalations. Moreover, by selecting option one allows us to seek the additional $950,000 from the federal government, significantly reducing our financial impact. Delaying the project or re-tendering would not only result in a 9-month setback, but also lead to severe financial implications with the increased cost and the potential loss of critical funding both from the federal and state governments and Lottery West. So re-tendering poses significant risks, including further cost escalations, and with only two responses from 52 organisations in the initial tender process. Furthermore, delays would also damage our reputation as negatively impacting on our community trust and the city's ability to deliver on its commitments. So in conclusion, accepting the tender for Phase 3 Landscape under Option 1 is the most prudent and beneficial course of action that secures the project's future, minimises financial risks, and ensures timely delivery of the much-anticipated and hugely community-supported Percy Doyle Outdoor Use Facility. I urge you to support the recommendation and the motion, I mean. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed, and that item is carried. We now come to 12.20. I'll invite Deputy Mayor up to the chair.
Okay, the item before us is 12.20, tender 012/24, processing of commingled recyclable service. Do we have a mover for this recommendation? Thank you, Councillor Hamilton-Prime. Do we have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Ventura. Councillor Hamilton-Prime.
Just to move as the officer's recommendation, thank you.
Councillor Ventura, would you like to speak on this?
Reserve my right, thanks.
Would any councillors wish to speak or ask questions on this item? Okay, I'll make a couple of comments myself. So, indeed, I fully support the officer's recommendation on this matter, and I would urge all elected members to consider supporting it as well. With that in mind, do we have the recommendation before us? It's on the screen. Okay, and the on the screens in front of you for voting. Can elected members please cast their votes using the screens before you? Just for the benefit of administration, I see that I'm down as voting as the mayor because I'm sitting in his chair. I assume that you'll take that into account. Yeah. Okay, I confirm then that that vote is carried unanimously. Thank you. So thank you. I'll now wait for the mayor to return to the chamber before continuing to the next item on the agenda. I think Councillor Fishwick may have been gone to get him. Just while we're waiting for the mayor to return to the chair, I will just point out that the next item we're going to move on to is 13.1.1, which is report the policy committee, and then I'll hand over to the mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Item 13.11, Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. I'd like to move the committee's recommendation as written.
So I moved. Councillor
Chester. Happy to second.
Happy to second. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Look, I think that this is an important amendment to the planning scheme that is being proposed here. This is about setting a long-term strategic direction of saying that these areas are of environmental value and that we should have the planning scheme reflect what is actually on the ground in these particular bushland areas. So many of them have particular significance as ecological linkages or within their own locations for particular environment, for particular ecological communities. So I'd also like to first thank the administration for the work that they've done in considering this and bringing it forward to the council. I think it's important that with these decisions, because this is about planning for not just 5 or 10 years, but looking into the long term, into the 10, 20-year marks, to see how can we preserve biodiversity in the district and how we can support and plan for it. I think it's a positive inclusion that the administration and council has been responsive to the community consultation, which has asked for the inclusion of the Duncraig Library bushlands to be included in the scheme amendment. And I think it's worth also considering that at the committee meeting there were a couple of objections to the planned amendment, but many of those objections have been answered by the city's officers by email. There were some concerns around, does this mean that these areas will be fenced out so people cannot enter them? That is not necessarily going to be the case. Many of these areas are, in fact, low priority and not recommended for fencing. Other areas that might be medium priority, some of them areas which people at this time can't enter anyway or are already fenced. And any areas that are not fenced, if they are to be fenced in the future, do require coming through the capital works process through the council. So it's not something that's going to happen by itself without the council knowing. It would have to be this council determining to fence off these areas and exclude the public from them. So I don't see that as particularly a great concern, given that is something that would be a concern that would be primarily about what a future council might conclude in a capital works budget, and that would be something for that council to determine at that time. So I don't really see that as a particularly strong objection to this. There are some concerns about playing fields, and again, there are many areas in the city where playing fields can be considered. I think just having a blank approach of saying, well, just because there's some of these areas which might be in the vicinity of a playing field, therefore they shouldn't be included in the scheme, I think people, if they are of that opinion, should single out those individual parks and say why those particular parks, not just saying, well, there's a playing field in the vicinity. I think they need to go one step further and say, well, why particularly a playing field would be suitable in that location. There's ways which we can optimize our existing playing field areas, but coming back to why this motion is important is this is about planning for the long term. It's about 10, 20 years from now. So when people look at Joondalup from a high level, they look at the scheme map, they look at how density is laid out across the district, where are the public open spaces, where are the environmental reserves. And this is about laying it out in a way so in the future people can see what they are, what's to be valued, and how we can preserve it. So I'll stop there. I will answer objections. But yes, I would commend the motion to the council. It has been through a fair amount of discussion. Prior to this point, so I'd encourage everyone to support it as written.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll try and keep it short, but I think the background is important. Not long ago, the city took it on itself, and this is not a council initiative. This was done by city staff, and for that alone, they're to be commended. What they decided to do was to look at all of their public open spaces, or parks if you like, that had remnant vegetation in them. Now the idea was to look at the prosody and determine whether there was sufficient biodiversity value to change the status of those small areas of bushland from POS or public open space and reallocate them to another category, environmental conservation reserve. And this was all done under local planning scheme number 3. This resulted initially in 83.2 hectares being added to the city's environmental estate in one hit. More recently, the city identified another 31 natural areas within the city's parks, which contain further bushland worthy of examination. So in the small space of a year, more or less, we've had 111 hectares added to our pre-existing 500 hectares of natural areas. So in one hit, in that short space of time, we've increased our environmental estate by 20%. Now, in anyone's terms, this is a spectacular outcome. I mean, this is so progressive environmentally, I can't tell you how, well, thrilled I am, I suppose, and particularly as it was a city initiative. I can't take any credit for this whatsoever, but I would have liked to have. Anyway, I guess that sums it up, and I would ask fellow councillors to support this recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Chester. Further comments, Council? Councillor Fishwick?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On page 160 of the report, it provides rationale for the inclusion of the Duncraig Myrie bushland, and that bushland is located on civic and community reserve land, and the scheme is focused on natural areas in public open space reserves. It is, however, considered appropriate to include it in the proposed scheme amendment given the community feedback through the consultation process. The council also recognising the area of the value of this bushland and protect it
installed fencing around it a couple of years ago following our support to prevent the vegetation being disturbed by pedestrian traffic. It's also noted that the Duncraig Library bushland is recognised as having biodiversity and conservation value consistent with the objective of the Environmental Conservation Reserve in LPS3. I therefore support the motion before us this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Say thanks to the officers for bringing forward this recommendation and also the ability to make a change and reflect the wishes of our community in terms of Duncraig Library Bushland. And also thank all the members of the community that took to act and make their feelings known on this matter. And, congratulations on your efforts at seeing this change. So well done. And it's positive to see that the community can have an impact on these items as they come forth. So thanks all round, and look forward to this one going through. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments, Councillor Pizzi?
Thanks, Mayor. I just want to reflect that I think this policy is a good one and it's important to further protect bushland areas. But my caution is that community could be restricted in using these spaces in the future, and I would like to see the interaction between the community's bushlands to be able to remain in a respectful way where the two environments support each other. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Just a couple from myself, and I had I'll say from the outset that I will foreshadow the alternate which Councillor Hutton had requested. As I'd flagged at the committee meeting, while I completely support keeping these areas as natural areas permanently, so my opposition to this is not that they remain, it's very much that they remain as natural areas, but it's how they functionally work as active natural areas into the future. And I acknowledge the officer's response that this change at the moment doesn't have an impact in terms of their standing as environmentally sensitive areas under the EP Act, but Environmental Protection Act. However, it would be a very small amendment, in fact, not an entirely unforeseeable amendment, that a local planning scheme zoning for environmental conservation were to become a trigger point. And I note our history of trying to do simple works to facilitate people's access through and around these areas can often come up against that process. So while they should remain as natural areas because they're urban natural areas, it's important that we do facilitate access. We fence off areas with high value vegetation, but we have good footpaths. We have good interpretation. We encourage people in the community to enjoy these areas. And as foreshadowed in Councillor Hutton's, where they're adjacent to sporting ovals, that there's some flexibility in how we deal with them to meet the recreational needs of our community. For those areas where they do fall under, say, for example, Bush Forever, and I'm aware of examples where councils required to clear 18 metres, 18 square metres in total, simply to realign a footpath. Those then can be appealed. That can add a considerable amount of time and expense to the city, both in trying to put forward the application, but also people exercising 100% their due rights to follow those things up through that process. But there is a risk for me that if we engage preemptively in this way, we potentially open ourselves up to some of those delays in what are very small and, in my view, very good opportunities and capital works projects, such as new fencing, new footpaths, these kind of management responses from the city. So that's my caution. I suspect this motion will probably get up in any event. No stress on that front, but that was my caution at policy. It remains my caution, and as I said, I'd foreshadow Councillor Hutton's alternate to that effect. Thank you. Further comments? Councillor O'Neill, have you... Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you. Just to clarify that, obviously this is quite positive and I do support it. However, I was quite interested in Councillor Hutton's foreshadowing of the alternate. If we are to vote this one down, does the alternate comes up? Is that correct?
That is correct. That's what I foreshadowed. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. In that case, obviously, I do support all this, but I will be voting against it. So I can obviously look at Councillor Hutton's foreshadowed motion, which will hopefully come through. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. Councillor Kingston, do you wish to close?
Yes, I will. I'll first start by addressing some of these concerns. As far as the concerns from the mayor, as far as could the community be restrained from, you know, or delayed with particular capital works, look, we have capital works which occur all the time in areas which are currently zoned as environmental conservation, which is what this is proposing. That's not uncommon. If we look to our coastal reserves, we have the coastal paths which are put through. We've seen the clearing permits which go through that. It's not particularly an obstacle, unless there's a threatened ecological community. But in that case, regardless of whether you made this change, you'd have this, that problem anyway. But as far as the general clearing in bush forever areas and in the coastal path, we haven't had any significant problems. And if we look at other areas where there's bushland areas, we don't have concerns particularly about putting in the paths. And if these are, as the report suggests, medium priority areas and lower priority, there's one priority area in here with Callery Park, but most of the medium priority, I think it's unlikely we're going to have significant problems with any clearing permits or as the circumstances which the mayor has alluded to, in my opinion at least. I think it's important to remember the planning scheme is not a, it's not a final document. It's a document that can always be changed and reviewed. That's the nature of it. But it's about saying on a high level, what is then our strategic priorities? And for me, why this is important is that for where I live in Edgewater, and I've lived there for about 10, 20 years now, is that I have seen a change in the biodiversity in the district. The variety of birds that I see, the colours of different insects, it is changing. And we are in an area of Perth where there is an increase in clearing in areas in Wanneroo. And if we don't preserve the local small areas of bushland, we will have problems. We will have problems on those species. We see it with black cockatoos, which were very common in Joondalup, very common in the north here. And now the population has fallen 90% within 15 years. And that's why it's important to look at these small areas, because these small areas are actually the areas that are supporting that biodiversity and those threatened or endangered species. They might not seem like much individually, but overall, that's that is how some of those species now get by.
Councillor, I'm not sure carnabies were raised in matters. I'm not sure about the figures you just quoted there either, but I'm not sure they were raised. I'll ask you to confirm your comments.
That's all right.
Thank you.
I'll send you some elements to do with those population figures at another time. But confining my comments to responses, yes, I don't foresee it's necessary. It's necessary to go to Councillor Hutton's motion. As I said, the planning scheme itself is a live document. We can change it if there's problems. If we do need to find areas where there's playing fields, we can realign reserves, we can change things. That's what a council does all the time. So it's not a big issue. And at the same time, I would say also that the list of reserves that are stated there for possible playing fields in the future, once again, it's just possible. That doesn't mean that it's suitable. It's a suitable location. They are identified as possible locations. The administration has done a fair amount of work scoping out these sites to try and prevent there being conflicts. But the purpose of the motion, once again, is to try and balance competing priorities. Yes, sport is a priority in the district. Yes, recreation is, but how do we balance that? And once again, this is not about restricting use. It's actually about saying, planning it out strategically. I expect many of these areas would be very suitable to have footpaths in, very suitable in some cases to have fences, and very suitable in other cases not to have fences. But as far as the infrastructure, that's not what this council decision's doing. This is just saying for the planning scheme. As far as the infrastructure in the future, again, that can come through a capital works process. And if people have concerns about access can be dealt with at that time. And I wouldn't expect that the administration would go proactively
preventing people from accessing their local parks. It will come through council if there's any of those concerns. So I don't see it as a necessity to vote against this motion. So I think we should support the officer's recommendation and support what's been proposed by the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and the motion is carried. We go now to 13.1.5, the Visual Arts Review. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. I would just like to move the committee's recommendation as written.
Thank you. So moved. I have a seconder. Seconder, Councillor Vinciullo. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. I think it's positive that we're moving towards a formal visual arts program. There was dissent on some parts of the recommendation, and so that's my intention on moving this motion. So I will be supporting point one, point three, but I will not be supporting point two, just because I have a different opinion about how we should try and prioritise these within the city's strategic planning framework. And then point four, I think there were some concerns about whether that was proactively putting a position before the council had come to a final decision about public art on bus stops. So I think it's a positive that we're moving in this direction, but I would ask the mayor if we could vote on items 2 and 4 separately.
Happy to. Councillor Vinciullo.
Thank you. Through you, I'll be fully supporting the recommendations of the city. I'm happy with the sense of direction and progress, and we're making more steps forward. And to see things progressing for the city's visual arts community is a very positive thing. Work to be done. The steps are going forward, and I'll be fully supporting. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? If not, I'll go to the motion, and I'll put point one first and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed, and point one is... Oh, sorry. No, it's not closed. I jumped the gun there. Declare it closed and carried unanimously. My apologies. Point two, put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed. Point two is carried. Point three, and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and carried, and point four. And ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. Declare the voting closed and point four is carried. That concludes the agenda items, noting that we have a notice of motion there. So I'll seek a mover for an exception resolution that council adopts by exception the following items, being item 12.1, 12.2, 12.3, that was 1.3, 12.3, 12.4,
12.7. Are we able to withdraw 12.13, please, Mr. Mayor? Sorry.
I can. I'm actually in the middle of... we'll let the exception resolution lapse and we will go back in the agenda and withdraw item 12.13. Councillor Aftis.
Just to move the item as tabled, thanks.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Seconded, Councillor Hamilton Prime. Councillor Raftis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The event was held, issues and KPIs, and I think we had some increased or improved sort of capture of the data surrounding that
to meet those KPIs. Still have reservations, but I understand that we're sort of locked in to pretty much sign off on another year of this event, given our the nature of our contract wording. From my point of view, I still see this as a rather large sum of money to be factored into one event, and still have my concern that we got this level of funding through this event, which after an initial expression of interest process that was sort of valued around $200,000 from memory that we sought expressions of interest from. So if we go to a much higher amount, I would think we should go through the process of taking it back out to the public again. Anyway, this is where we're at, $350 for the one more year on this. Interesting to see how it goes for a third year. I understand this year was interrupted due to weather. We'll see how it progresses on its third year around the CBD. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm a huge supporter of this event. I think it was a fantastic activation, a very positive activation of the city. Classic car culture is alive and well in Joondalup. I look forward to continuing. And I know the organisers did have some initial challenges, but I believe that the next event will be even better, and I look forward to seeing the community enjoy it again.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Festival of Motoring, obviously a big event. I think that perhaps if we can maybe get some better clarity on the attendance indicators and what people were actually doing there on that weekend, this time around, I think that'll be fantastic in identifying where we can improve moving forward in future years if council decides that this is what we want to do.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Raftus, do you wish to close? I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. Declare voting closed and the item is carried. Any other items before I go to an exception resolution? In that case, did you still have that? Thank you, team. 12.8, 12.10, 12.12, 12.17, 12.18, 13.12, 0.1.2. You're onto it. 13.1.3, 13.1.4. So those items on the screen before us, do I have a mover for that exception resolution? Moved Councillor O'Neill, seconded Councillor Hamilton Prime. I'll put that motion, Hamilton Prime, and ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. Declare the voting closed, and that is carried. Next, we have reports of the CEO, of which there are none. Urgent business, of which there are is none. Motions, of which previous notice has been given. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move the motion as it's written.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder for that motion? Seconded Councillor Kingston. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll just read it quickly as is. The motion is obviously privacy and responsible information sharing. Understanding how data is stored is crucial in any community's digital age. Firstly and foremost, awareness of the data and usage practices empowers individuals to protect their privacy, personal data. We had an incident several weeks ago where something was posted online. Obviously, when this was identified correctly, the damage had already been done. Understanding how we use our data and how it is stored, community members can make informed decisions. Knowledge of data practices fosters trust between the community and service providers. Companies that are transparent about their data handling processes are more likely to gain the trust of their users, so we don't have incidents like this again. when people understand how their data is being utilised, whether for improving services, targeting advertisements or other purposes, they can consent to these practices or opt out of these practices. Understanding data usage has significant implications for broader societal issues, and data can be used to influence public opinion, manipulate behaviours and even impact democratic processes. So having an awareness of these potential uses helps communities recognise and guard against the misinformation, targeted manipulation and other forms of digital exploitation. Educated communities are better equipped to demand regulatory measures that protect against such abuses and to support initiatives that promote digital literacy and ethical data practices. In an era where data breaches and leaks are increasingly common, knowing how data is stored and how security measures put in place can be mitigating the impact of such instances. Communities that understand the importance of the data encryption, secure storage solutions, and the principal data minimization can advocate for and adopt best practices to protect their information. Finally, understanding data storage and usage is essential for fostering innovation and competition in the digital economy. When communities are knowledgeable about data practices, they can support businesses and technologies that prioritize user privacy and data security. This demand drives innovation, encouraging the development of new solutions that protect personal information while still offering valuable services. It also promotes fair competition by enabling smaller companies to differentiate themselves through superior data practices. In conclusion, it is imperative for communities to understand how their data is stored and used. This knowledge empowers individuals and communities to protect their privacy, fosters trust in digital services, guards against societal manipulation, mitigates the impact of data breaches, and drives innovation in the digital economy. So as we navigate an increasingly data-driven world, informed communities are better equipped to ensure that their personal information is handled responsibly, ethically, and securely. So I hope the Council can support this motion.
Thank you, Councillor O'Neill. Councillor Kingston?
Thank you. I'd like to first start by saying that I'd like to thank the administration for supporting a request for the report, which is on page 210 of this month's agenda. I think it's important that, as Councillor O'Neill has said, is that as we move towards a more data-driven society or where we have regulatory processes that either purposefully or inadvertently collect data, that the public feels that the public has a certainty that that data is going to be protected and then used appropriately. There's been many instances where there's been data breaches, which have been sometimes quite concerning for the organisations for which the breaches occurred, and then the loss of trust related to that has been significant. And once trust is lost, it's hard to regain, especially for governments which... over the long term, many governments have been experiencing problems with trust. So I think if we can proactively lead in this area and look at ways which we can more effectively manage users' data and from a perspective that respects the privacy of the individual person, I think that's something positive. It does appear that there's legislation that is coming through next year, so I believe on this particular point. So I think us going ahead, investigating how we can best start to manage with these changing procedures that the state might be implementing, and then at the same time protecting the privacy of individuals. Of course, one of the big concerns as always is that data is collected for one purpose, and that's legitimate, and then sometimes there's a secondary use which is not necessarily what the public feels that they have signed up to when the data was initially collected. So it's important, I think, that we have our policies clear and that there's clarity both from the council as the governing body, understanding how data is used, and clarity for the public, and also clarity for the administration. I think if you have good processes, good policies, good procedures, you know, it's unlikely that we're going to then encounter some of the reputational risks and other risks that can be associated with privacy concerns.
Thank you for the comments. Councillor Ventura.
Thank you. Through you, my concern is that, once again, we're heading towards a direction where we're involving ourselves in decision-making that's really not our place. The reality is this is an area that's really heavily guided by state and federal. And we talk about processes. That is the process. Legislation, you just mentioned this a little bit earlier, Councillor. That is where we need to be drawing the strategy from. That's where we need to have the discussion from as legislation comes in. Government bodies who put together the process. And many of the things that we use are third-party softwares, have T's and C's connected to them. Most of nearly anything you do with software has terms and conditions. So I caution us to, when we get involved in, trust me, I'm very big on privacy and responsible information sharing. I believe in it wholeheartedly, but I also don't believe that we should be making decisions in a space where we're not the authority. So that is my concern, and for that reason alone, I think we're overstepping. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Pizzi.
I think that it's important that the city embraces innovation and technology, but it is important that we bring the community along with us and that the community feels safe that these advances will not be used nefariously. I think this motion is important as a starting point for us to build trust and policy so that we can embrace future and current advancements. I think local government does have a place in ensuring that they make policy around how technology is used and how it will affect its communities, and to make sure that the community is happy with how it's being used. And so I think, you know, we also play a role in this as well as state and federal.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, look, I think we need to be progressing this and looking at how we deal with it. I mean, obviously, privacy is and how we keep information secure is important to us as a council and as an organisation. So I think having an active view of it and considering the various other aspects that come with it should be looked at, and we should be trying to stay ahead of it and not just sitting back and waiting to get told on what we should do as perhaps minimal requirements. Other aspects like the CE covered off and as part of this process is gets talked about from my point of view where how data on the security cameras that the city operates is maintained and who shared with. So I think having it clear so that we can communicate to the public how that footage might be used provides comfort to those who will attend those areas. Similarly, when we subsidise people with home security camera systems, how that what requirements are of them. So there's a wide range of information, and if we look to be as part of this, we've got this range of data, is how do we keep it safe within our own systems? And if we see ourselves as a centre of cyber security, then I would think it's an important part of this process to understand how we actually are protecting this information and stopping it being obtained improperly. So fully support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor O'Neill, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll keep it very brief. Look, nothing is perfect, but something like this obviously gives us a way forward and it keeps us ahead of things. As Councillor Rafter said, it is important to stay ahead of these things. We can offer this clarity to our community and we can offer a little bit more information to them, and they can see that there is nothing nefarious, as Councillor Pizzi obviously points out as well. It's always our place. It's always our place to ensure that our community is well informed. Obviously, voting for something like this and carrying it forward, we get a report that we can take for our community that we can share with them together, and we can get some feedback from there. We can obviously look at things a little bit further if we need to, but I say we should move forward with something like this rather than sit on our hands and wait for somebody, as we've been just said, to tell us what to do. So I encourage you all to support this motion.
Thank you, Councillor O'Neill. I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and the motion is carried unanimously. Next item of business is announcements of notices of motion for the next meeting. Are there any? If not, I declare the meeting closed at 3:08 p.m. Good afternoon. As a side note, love seeing the word nefarious being used in debate twice.